Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am once again not back with Dom today, but continuing this week of catching up on other reality TV shows that I don't normally get a chance to talk about. Today I'm back to talk about one of my favorites, The Challenge on MTV, and joining me to do so, returning to the podcast, I'm very excited to talk to Alex Kidwell. Alex, how are you?
I'm good, man. It's good to talk to you. It's been a little while.
Yeah,
how's things?
Things are good. Sorry, I'm already talking over the guest. This is off to a great start, but things are fantastic. How are things with you? I know you're very busy keeping up with all of what's going on with BB19.
Yeah, covering Big Brother this summer has not been as much fun for me as maybe it's been in the past, but I'm still hanging in there. And other stuff. You know, we're doing Game of Thrones stuff. I'm doing some work over there, and yeah, just generally, just staying busy with podcasting. And
yeah,
stuff.
That's awesome. Very cool. I know maybe the recent stretch of Big Brother seasons haven't been the most exciting, with the exception of BB Can 5.
Yeah, you could say that. I had more fun in the spring. That's definitely accurate.
Yeah, well, at least you have BB Can 6 coming back. And by the way, on air, a big kudos to the RHAP Nation for making that happen. I believe that it's because of that BB Can 6 is coming back. That's incredible.
Yeah, well, Rob should get a lot of credit. I didn't do anything, but yeah, I mean, that is awesome.
Well, I think you and the whole LFC are a big reason of why Rob's Big Brother audience has grown to the extent that it has. But yeah, so everyone, of course, who is watching Big Brother, I'm sure is familiar with that. So definitely be checking all of what Alex has going on over at robhasawebsite.com and, of course, on postshowrecaps.com. But Alex, let's dive into nothing on CBS reality or HBO prestige drama. Let's dive into what I will lovingly describe as some, like, trash TV that I'm very much a fan of. Let's talk about MTV's The Challenge. Give me your fandom history of being someone who has watched The Challenge. Have you been there since the beginning, 30 seasons ago?
Not quite since the beginning, but man, I've been a fan of The Challenge longer than I've been a fan of Big Brother. Wow. I'm trying to think of if it's probably about as long as I've been a fan. I was a fan of Survivor since the beginning. And I was watching The Challenge. I think the first episode or the first season of The Challenge that I watched was like Battle of the Seasons. I don't know. It was definitely like the heyday of The Miz. And so, yeah, I've been on this for a long time back. Like, yeah, definitely pre-high school days. So The Challenge has definitely a special place in my heart. I agree with you. It's definitely trash TV relative to a lot of maybe other stuff that I watch, but it's really fun. There's a lot about The Challenge that I think is, you know, hits on the things that are enjoyable to people who like the strategy of like a Survivor or Big Brother, but then also really ratchets up the physicality of the competitions to like a 20 in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, if you're someone that enjoys like the physical elements of a Survivor Challenge, there's a lot to enjoy from the challenge, the show as well.
Yeah. So for me, I've watched, it feels like a really long time, but I've been a casual fan throughout. I've never rewatched any of the seasons. I think I have seen every season since Fresh Meat 2, with the exception of the Battle of the Season. So I missed, like, I heard a lot about Frank from, I think, Real World Las Vegas, but never really saw him in action other than leaving early. Mm-hmm. And that always felt like a missed opportunity for me. So I've been watching, I don't know what even season number Fresh Meat 2 is, but it's certainly been a long time for me. But as I said, I never go back and really think about them, or even really think about an episode long after it, for much after it airs. So my memory of like all of the history of The Challenge is not nearly what it is for Survivor or Big Brother. How are you in that department? If I throw out a bunch of fake news, are you going to be able to correct me?
I would think so. I'm pretty good. I think as far as The Challenge goes, I'm a pretty big nerd. I'm probably a bigger nerd about The Challenge than like a lot of people that play The Challenge, because they're not the kind of personalities that like study their own game to try to get better, even though a lot of them will play it over and over again. So yeah, I really pay attention to challenge history. Like, I like to think I have like a decent knowledge of like who's beaten who in head-to-head matchups. I actually have a spreadsheet where I track this stuff, which is like the nerdiest thing I've ever maybe mentioned on a podcast. I have a spreadsheet that tracks like challenge wins, like individual stuff. Yeah, it's fun for me, but it's very nerdy.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm pretty good in that respect. Okay. I've definitely gone back and even watched a few seasons.
Like rewatch them again. Yeah. All right. Well, that's definitely good. I'm glad that one of us at least is going to be able to get the history stuff right. And please feel free to fact check me at any point, because I definitely don't know what I'm talking about in a lot of places.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure between us it'll be fine. I know the one time we got together in New York and watched an episode together, and you seemed like you kind of knew what you were talking about. So yeah, I'm not worried.
I was thinking about that earlier today, actually, and it crossed my mind. That might be the only time that I've ever watched an episode of The Challenge with someone else in the room. I think I've watched by myself every single time, other than that one time at Podcast House. It was like 2 a.m, and everyone else was upstairs watching like BBOTT live feeds, and we went down and watched the new episode of The Challenge.
Yeah, I still maintain that we made the correct decision. And they were also like playing Mario Party and stuff, but, you know, we went downstairs. And I distinctly remember, you know, it was an interesting episode, and there was a montage of, you know, vomiting occurring to like, you know, Vivaldi or some kind of like very classical. It was really stood out to me at the time.
Yeah, it was like a gross food challenge, right?
Yeah, yeah, it was some kind of like Indian curry from this was during I don't know, it was like last spring.
Well, I know a lot of people are talking about this season so far being one of the best ever. Are you on board with that?
Yes, I'm loving this season. The Dirty 30 season. Mm-hmm. This is a lot of fun.
What could go wrong with a season called Dirty 30?
Yeah, well, I mean, as it happens, they've really leaned into the theme and the concept, and they really do seem to be, using a lot of the things that people enjoyed in the past, you know, the double cross reminiscent of the whole, Skull and Crossbones kind of Russian roulette thing they did in, I guess it was Free Agents, that people really enjoyed. It's pretty high drama, and, you know, it keeps people from gaming the system entirely. So it kind of adds a wrinkle to the game that keeps like a major alliance from steamrolling everything. And then, you know, there's just other stuff. I think there's just some good elements of strategy that have been thrown in, where I think the seasons where it's an individual game, but they're put into teams for different challenges. The teams are mixed up. And then, I mean, it really fosters this dynamic where people are playing for themselves, I think. And so you're seeing a lot of people not only do that, but then with the added element of this is the dirty season, we brought you all back because you're the dirtiest players ever. I think you are seeing people like really lean into that as well. And exemplify what they think the show is looking for, which is, you know, a schemey game. And I think, you know, it's really an enjoyable result.
Yeah, I think MTV does not feel the same way necessarily about their players that I think like Jeff Probst and Survivor sometimes will feel about the people that they put on the island, where I don't think MTV feels like they necessarily owe these people anything, and they're very willing to kind of treat them like lab rats almost, and just push them towards whatever is going to spark drama, in the same way I don't even think Big Brother is willing to necessarily do a lot of the time. And I think not only in production kind of encouraging and framing it in terms of, hey, this is the dirtiest season ever, like you mentioned, that double cross, I think early on, there are a lot of times where the people in all know going ahead, oh, this is going to be easy if I draw the double cross, who I'm going to put in out of this group. Later on in the game, I think that could be a really driving force, and seeing a lot of politicking around the double cross. So not only encouraging the players in the forms of like the verbiage they use and giving them a lot of alcohol, but also just the game design seems brilliant for me in getting these people to turn on each other.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then also, yeah, I mean, what you're talking about, you mentioned Crazy Frank earlier, and I'm thinking of Frank from what was it? It's not St. Thomas. I'm thinking of Frank, the guy who goes crazy every
now and
again.
I know who you're talking
about. Yes. Yeah, younger Frank. Who has since retired from the challenge. He did an interview, I think, at one point with Bill Simmons, where he was outlining some things that, like, I've always suspected but never knew for sure, such as that they, like, intentionally broke the air conditioning in Thailand just so everyone would be, like, extra pissed off. And, like, just little things like that, which are just, like, man, production is a bitch. Like, that is some serious next level. Like, yeah, just feed them, just full of alcohol, turn off the air, just do everything you can to really try to antagonize and instigate. And yeah, I mean, a lot of these people, you know, aren't going in necessarily as like strategic masterminds. I mean, they're drinking and having a good time and they're just kind of living. They're reacting to things in the moment and not really thinking about like, oh, how can this impact me in the game? I mean, we see so far this season, almost every week, someone has gone out drinking and put their foot in their mouth. And then almost, you know, immediately there's been repercussions for it in the form of the game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's interesting how that's played a factor. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, this, it just comes down to, you know, you've got a really compelling dynamic cast that is trying to play the game. I think everyone in there is like pretty much trying to play, you know, hard or really trying to, you know, win. And I was just impressed. I mean, maybe it's just that I'm watching Big Brother all summer and it's refreshing. But like, I, you know, there was one moment in particular, you know, a couple weeks ago where Camilla is, you know, negotiating with Jemmy right before Jemmy ends up making a big move on Jenna and Kayla. And, you know, what I'm hearing from Camilla in that moment, I'm like, this is more strategic than anything I've seen in Big Brother all summer long. This is no, it's pretty good. I'm impressed.
Well, I think it's a great game format in general. Like the design, the structure for the season is always something that I'm frankly nervous about going into any season of the challenge. And as you hit on a little earlier, I'm just blanketly pro individual seasons. I do not love the pairs or the team ones. I think the individual ones are almost always going to be the best. And this one, I think it's just very clear to the players from early on, there is not going to be an easy path to the end here, short of just running the table in the actual challenges. Like, you're going to have to get your hands dirty, and you're going to have to put your faith in people who are probably going to have to be playing a lot of different sides. And I think that gets everyone in the right mindset very early on. And I think we're looking at like a great trajectory now going forward. I think the drama that we've seen early is hopefully going to be very little compared to the actual game political drama that we see later on.
Oh, yeah. It'll be cool to see where it goes, too, because, yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of these people are very close friends. That's right. An element of the challenge that obviously separates it from a Survivor or Big Brother. You've got all these returning people who come back season after season. And so they establish these really close friendships. But ultimately, it is going to be a game where they're going to have to turn on each other. And it's going to create some hurt feelings on some level, almost inevitably every time. So it yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. We already saw some people try to figure it out. Like, the girls were really trying to game it. I think, like, Veronica and Anissa and maybe Cara and Camilla, like, the kind of the old school girls contingent were talking about, well, we want to maybe, you know, not go after a Jemmy or not go after Marie because we feel like we can beat them. Like, we want to keep girls around that we feel like we can beat if we were to go into the elimination. But then, the flip side of that is you're finding that if you keep trying to put in strong girls against each other, then strong girls are coming back. And eventually, I mean, you're going to have to throw in some of these girls that you don't want, that you were hoping to keep for like the end game, because it's either them or you when the strong girls are winning safety and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I actually want to say, I think one of the best aspects to the challenge is, in order to eliminate someone, they have to go into the elimination and then just and lose the elimination. It's unlike in Survivor, where if just enough people happen to not like you, you're just gone.
Yeah, and I mean, I think another thing that's very cool is, you know, I've always enjoyed the Big Brother element of the HOH, because that's like one person that can – that shifts from week to week, and you really have to kind of play the entire group socially if you want to maintain good relationships and not go on the block, as opposed to Survivor, where you can maintain the majority and stay in the right with the numbers and kind of, you know, potentially coast for a while. I think I'm loving that this is a situation where week to week, the power dynamic is different. I mean, one week it's a couple that wins and they're the power couple. And then the next week it's a, you know, half the house is the team that won and they're all safe. And the deliberation comes down to 12 people trying to decide who they're going to put in. So I am enjoying that there's really nothing you can, you know, rest on in terms of, okay, well, I know if I, you know, am good with just the rest of, you know, the girls in the house, then I should be good. Or if I'm just good with, you know, a majority of people, I should be good. Because, I mean, you could just, you know, be good with everybody except the newest two people, but they could win just by themselves, and you know, then you're in trouble too. So it's yeah. it's been good.
Right. I think it's a critical element, and this is like the biggest flaw in Survivor, is that it's so hard to upset the apple cart if a certain number of people decide they all want to lock in together, whereas on The Challenge or Big Brother or The Genius, one of our favorites, all of that is very easily done just by winning one game, and I think that's so huge for keeping a season interesting, and that's, I know, not a new criticism of Survivor, and it's frankly a fundamental piece of what makes Survivor the game that it is, and I understand that that's not going to idea of one rogue free agent being able to overturn things wouldn't even make Survivor necessarily even a better show. I just think that that's, in general game terms, a really solid thing, where one person can maybe even just get lucky and find themselves temporarily in a position of power. It's going to make for a more interesting season when people know the whole time that that could at least happen. Alex, let's dive into some of the goings-on and some of these players. And the way that I have this kind of sorted for me is I have, frankly, three tiers of that I've ranked these people in of how okay. familiar I am with them and how kind of I think their status in my eyes on the show. Because as you've hit on, a lot of these people come back for way more seasons than not. And that's going to be a big talking point for the first person I want to get into, which is I don't think you can start a conversation about any season of The Challenge without the knowledge that Johnny Bananas is going to be there. What do you make of having this one person who, maybe you can even give me the stat on this, it feels like he's been on, what, 14 out of the last 16 seasons or something insane. He's going to be there every time, and he's going to go deep every time. What do you make of that, just as a player and also as a fan of the show and as a viewer?
Yeah, well, I just pulled up my Excel sheet here, Colin.
Okay, great.
Personally, I think you know, the Challenge Wikipedia doesn't count the most recent kind of mini season that they did, which was Champs versus Pros, which was a very short runtime, but I thought very enjoyable and really followed the challenge format. Only one team was kind of former challenge competitors, and one team was, you know, professional athletes. However, it did follow traditional challenge format. And then there was like traditional head-to-head eliminations where, like, in some cases, like, we actually got Wes versus Bananas. So, like, to me, that's a statistic that counts. You know, if Wes is beating Bananas, like, that should factor into their lifetime rivalry. So I considered that season a season. So if you're counting that, Bananas has been in 16 seasons, which, yeah, that's a lot of seasons. You know, technically that would make the Dirty 30, Dirty 31, though. So for all intents and purposes, of the 30 seasons, he's been in 15 of them, exactly half. And
how many in a row? It seems like how many has he missed out of the last 16?
Oh, yeah. I mean, one.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe one. Because, there was one season where notably, and it was, you know, the recent remake of Battle of the Seasons, which is, you know, the first season I watched way back when that I talked about. They did it again. And the biggest criticism there was, you know, you had Frank and Zach and some of these, you know, newer young bucks win that season and kind of dominate. And Bananas was like, but there was nobody, you know, who's a regular from the old school group on that season. So, I mean, yeah, I think that was the only one he's missed in as long as I can remember. And I get it. Like, he's a very entertaining personality. He's very charismatic. He has all these great, like, sound bites and confessionals. Usually, like, when people are stupid, like, he's always the guy that they go to summarize it. Like, he can do it better than most of the people. I mean, in fairness, a lot of these people aren't that bright, so they don't necessarily have, like, all that many amazing narrators. So you kind of need a Bananas from that perspective. But, it is a little frustrating, I think, to see him come back, especially when he's had so much success in, you know, recent years, just to see him come back again and again and again. And see, you know, if they're going to do it that way, see other people not necessarily come back, because when it's like Banana, there's definitely been a few seasons, I think, in recent years where it's almost like feels like Bananas against a bunch of new kids. And that has proven to be a mostly uninteresting dynamic, I think, for me and a lot of viewers.
Yeah, oh, I totally agree. There was a long stretch where, for a couple of years at least, where every season almost felt like Redemption Island, where it was just Bananas is going to waltz to the end and probably win, but that's kind of a foregone conclusion, and it's just a matter of how that ends up happening. I guess there was the one season where he went out kind of early and then came back through a literal Redemption Island with
Battle of the X's too.
Yeah.
I was just gonna bring that up. Where like Wes finally manages to stage the successful coup that he talks about staging every season and is usually thwarted on. He finally pulls it out. And Bananas is eliminated. Like, he pits Bananas against Leroy, the dream matchup that he's always wanted. And, yeah, Bananas gets to do a redemption arc, which plays out on a Websodes. And he comes back in.
Yeah, well, I also think as you said, I think Bananas is the number one narrator that I've seen on the challenge. And maybe it's just because I've seen him more than anyone else. But I think he is a notable like step ahead of everyone else in the diary room or whatever it's called. He's very, very funny and articulate. I also though think that it's a pretty insane advantage, right, within the game. If everyone knows, not only do I have to contend with Bananas now, but if I screw him over, he's going to be on every season for years to come, and I'm going to have to keep dealing with that.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, he does seem to have the closest thing there is to tenure.
Right.
We've seen people stay for long periods of time, but Bananas, you know, I've never seen anyone with this degree of consistency. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of incentive to work with him, at least in the early going of these seasons. However, I will say, I think in the most recent seasons, we've seen more and more people kind of with a willingness to turn on him and play the game, even if they're close to him. So I think, you know, in the past, you would see a lot of people who were almost kind of like loyal minions of his where, you know, it would kind of come down to them and then they'd fight it out and Bananas would usually win. I think now we're seeing more and more people who are going to be willing to pull that trigger a little bit before the finale because it will set them up with a better chance of winning money. And I think one thing the challenge has done to kind of encourage that is, you know, certainly in the last like 4 or 5 seasons, I've noticed the payout has become like exponentially increased for first. Yeah. I mean, it used to be like they pay out, you know, top 3 teams of 2 or whatever it was, or like top 3 guys, top 3 girls, and it would be, you know, like first would maybe make half of that. Now it seems like first is making like 75-80% of the pool, which is, I mean, yeah, like pretty insane if we're talking about a pool of, I guess in this case, $1 million. We'll see what that payout breakdown ultimately ends up being. But
yeah, no, I totally noticed the same thing. And like I think the other element to Bananas and why he's such a presence on the show, though, is as far as I can tell, if I'm drafting a winner at the start of the season, not only based on just his social ability and advantages that are built into that, it really seems to me like Bananas is still the best competitor out there. Is that ringing true for you?
Yeah, in terms of all around performance, I think that's absolutely true. I would say that when it comes to individual things, like I don't think he's like the overall fastest. I'd say maybe that's Corey. I wouldn't say he's like the absolute strongest. I'd say that might be Hunter. But yeah. I mean, God, he's got so much experience. Or no, CT. I'm sorry. I always CT came in late.
Leroy too. I also crossed my mind.
And Leroy's a very strong dude as well. Yeah, Leroy is he's like one of my favorite reality TV characters of all time. I absolutely love Leroy. And like he used to have an active Twitter. He doesn't really tweet anymore. But like he's just an average dude. You know, like you think of reality TV, you know, he's like a character on TV and you're like, oh, this is a guy on my TV. But like Leroy is just like a trash man in Houston. Like he just lives a life. Like he's a regular dude. And he's just excited when these opportunities come up to go to like some faraway tropical place for free and drink and like hang out with beautiful women. And like I totally identify with it. And he's always like really funny and I think self-aware with a lot of the stuff he has to say. So yeah, Leroy's a lot of fun. But no, I think just in terms of, you know, whether it's a combination of it's his experience and just the fact that this is his full-time job. He talks about it from time to time. I mean, Bananas knows he's going to be back for every season. So when he's not on the challenge, he's training for the challenge. That's all he does. Mm-hmm. And he's been paid by this show in a way that allows him to really do that. He's, you know, by far and away at this point, the leader in terms of lifetime earnings on this show. So, it puts him in a position where I think you're right. I think he is definitely still the best performer, despite the fact he's starting to get on in years, as they say.
Yeah. One thing I've always wanted to talk about on air, but never had anyone to talk about it with, was that giant moment. I don't even remember. Rivals 3 is what the season was, where he takes the money from Sarah at the end of it. Is it classic Colin Stone hyperbole to say that that is like one of the defining moments of the challenge as a franchise?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that is in they had a couple episodes that, you know, they kind of slapped together that were recap episodes, recap shows with some people who are on this season commenting on past moments before this season came out. Some like some preseason material to just whet your appetite for the Dirty 30 season. And I mean, man, it came up over and over again in people's commentary where they're talking about Scummiest Move. Like all the people in the house are very aware of it. I don't think you're being hyperbolic at all because I understand. I mean, it did happen very recently, but man, in terms of the impact that that had, I think you can put it right up there with, and I think you even put it above The Island, because The Island, like, people seem to forget about the way Bananas, you know, pulled a huge betrayal at that point on someone from his own Real World season and, you know, really, really, you know, broke their heart at that point. I mean, that seems to almost be forgotten to a lot of people. But yeah, I mean, the Sarah thing, I think between just the impact that it had and the amount of money involved and just, oh man, it was so ruthless. I think that's always going to be just an iconic moment in this show for sure.
Well, I think one of the major considerations there probably was for him, like the opposite of what we say about how people have to deal with him, just knowing that he's going to be back. He probably knew for sure, if I take this money from Sarah, she's never coming back to this show.
That might have been a factor, and
whether she was coming back or not, I think he was going to take it, but I think that probably helped, is knowing this is going to put my biggest adversary out of the game forever.
Yeah, no, I think right. He's taking the money because it's so much money. I mean, they really incentivized him to do it. But yeah, I think more than that, I mean, we really have to, if we're going to talk about Bananas as a competitor or a personality on this show, I mean, he is a character and he is someone who's self-aware of Bananas the character. I mean, he refers to himself as Bananas. He, you know, makes merchandise like bobbleheads and stuff that he puts out there. You know, he really is – you know, tries to market himself in the off season and stuff. So I think it's very important to note that this is a guy that definitely knew that, okay, I'm going to screw over Sarah and it's going to make me look like a real douchebag, but I'm going to be able to leverage this to be one of the great reality TV villains of our time.
No question. And it seems like he's so far been able to stay off of the main list of targets, not a surprise early on in any season of the challenge, but even with people knowing he is obviously not someone who can be trusted long term to act in anyone's best interest but his own, it does look like, I guess he's been safe for all but I think the last one. It still does feel though like he's in a very solid position to start this game. Do you feel like we're due for yet another deep Johnny Bananas run here?
Probably. I would assume he's going to go pretty far. Yeah, you're right. I mean, what the Genius would call the main matches, in like just the regular challenges that they do, he's been very successful so far. So it's kind of been like, you know, Suri, where like he just doesn't have to go to tribal council. Right. Like we don't know what his position is because he's been safe every time. But I do feel like, you know, looking at this male cast, I feel like his number is going to come up sooner than it would in most seasons. I think in most seasons, there's a lot of Bananas nepotism. And I think if you look at the people who are still left, like, yeah, there's a good amount of that. But there's like a solid contingent of people who are not afraid to go after him if they were to get the ability to do so. I think the only thing that's been hampering that so far is that they've had one or two shots. And it just occurred to them that there's really no sense in – they have respect for Bananas' game. They really felt there was no sense in sending Bananas in against, you know, Ammo, I think. You know, that was an opportunity that they had that they chose not to take because, you know, like the Corey and Nelson alliance there is actually – I think, you know, Nelson at least is a pretty shrewd player and he's like a student of this game. Like I actually appreciate Nelson. You know, you hear him talk about it all the time, but he loves the challenge and he watches the challenge and he has respect for the people who played before him. And yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy who's smart enough with the numbers to recognize, like, if we go ahead and show our cards now by throwing Bananas in, like, we win the battle essentially, but he's almost certainly going to come back and we're going to be right back where we started.
Right. I think Nelson also very much strikes me as someone who really wants to make a name for himself within the franchise of the challenge.
Yeah.
And I think he understands that, you know, taking out Bananas would definitely make that happen, but now may not be the time. Yeah. I actually think Corey and Nelson in particular, they're the top of my list of like the current generation of like people I think are going to be around for a while. I think how they respond, like how they interact with Bananas in the kind of twilight of his career is going to be really, really crucial for how the challenge moves on as a franchise. Like, if Bananas keeps winning and winning and winning because they keep not going after him, I think that could be a very bad thing if they just become the next kind of like Zach figures. They just kind of aid him in winning.
Yeah. No, definitely. Or like Johnny Portland.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. Let's I'm sure we'll have more bananas come up as we talk through the rest of these people. Let's move over to what I would imagine has got to be another kind of challenge Hall of Famer. He's come up a little earlier, but CT, he's now I was thinking it's what an insane, just amazing trajectory of his life he has had go on TV, right? Like to start out as he was like the hothead, right, on his season of The Real World, and then he was getting kicked out of like a lot of the early challenges, like settles down, finds love, loses love in like the most staggering way possible, and now is this lovable dad that I think has become a pretty universal fan favorite at this point. Is that accurate to say about CT?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's all true. I mean, he, the rabid Wolverine, I mean, early on, he was very, very controversial. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people who, yeah, there was things he did then that I feel like if he was doing them now, people would be saying like, that person should never be on TV ever again. I mean, I don't know if that's accurate or not, but man, like, yeah, this is probably not accurate, you know, because now they let him, I feel like maybe they even let him get away with more physical contact than they used to, where like, you know, that I remember one challenge way back when where they sent Tina home for like one good punch. We're like, I don't know for sure now if one good punch would send home someone if they were like a, you know, a fan favorite. Like, I, remains to be seen. Like, production would get involved, but would they maybe just not really show the punch? Like, I don't know. I think it's a little more ambiguous these days than it's ever been. So I want to walk that back a little. But
okay, well, I think CT's punching days are over.
CT was violent. Yeah, he was a violent, violent guy early on. I mean, I still. To me, another just iconic challenge moment, one I'll never forget that's always etched in my memory, is when he's just chasing little Adam King around the house in the Duel 2, I believe it is, before he gets ejected, and saying stuff like, I'm going to smash his head and eat it, and production is trying to get in his way, and he's just throwing like multiple grown men to the side like ragdolls, trying to get at a man a third his size. And I mean, it's legitimately – like, you really think that he's going to murder this small man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very scary, real moment. So yeah, I mean, CT's come a long way from that. I mean, now he is, he's just on there talking about like, oh, I got to pay for diapers and stuff, which is, you know, it's great. I do. I love dad CT. And despite the talk of like him having a dad bod and stuff, I mean, if you watch the little mini series I was talking about, the Champs versus Pros, man, CT is still a beast. I mean, just a physical workhorse. Cameron Wimbley, who's like just, I mean, he was a really stud, you know, first round draft pick, NFL defensive end, was, I mean, really just, you know, pulling weight in this tug of war that they had on that season. And CT is just the only guy who could just match. I mean, he was really kind of holding it down against the guy that, I mean, you know, Cameron Wimbley was 6'7", 275, just a freak. So, I mean, to think that a guy who's just, you know, a dad is putting it in there with as somebody who's just like a specimen like that. I mean, CT is really an impressive guy with a lot of heart when he wants to dig deep.
Yeah, I mean, we said the same thing about bananas, and I would say the same about Durrell. I would have thought that, you know, challenge competitors would almost be like NFL running backs, where like anyone over 30 would be at like a huge disadvantage. But it really does seem like those three guys are still probably the most feared competitors, CT, bananas, and Durrell, in some order.
Yeah, well, and I don't think it's a coincidence, at least with two of them. I mean, you know, we talked about Bananas still trains actively for the challenges, like it's his job. Durrell, in his kind of challenge quasi-retirement that he took, you know, he's kind of come out of retirement in recent seasons, starting with the, I guess, Invasion of the Champions that they just did in the spring. But Durrell opened a gym. So, I mean, Jarrell's another guy, who, and he was a boxer as well. So he's another guy who, you know, just because he stopped doing the challenges doesn't mean he stopped working out. CT is the one that to me is just so fascinating because, you know, as far as I'm aware, like maybe he didn't stop working out, but, you know, he is. He's sitting on the couch and he's, you know, having family time. And he's very much a different person than he used to be when he was most feared in these shows. But it's so funny how, I mean, he's still feared in, you know, at the same level, just for a totally different way. I mean, people were afraid of him because they were afraid of what he might be capable of if they were to go against him early on. I feel like now they're afraid of him just because, you know, he commands respect and he's shrewd in these games. I mean, he's smart. He knows where the numbers are. He knows how to kind of, you know, stick with the people that are going to advance him in this game. And if you do end up calling him out, you know, he remembers, and he's a very tough out still. He's a very big guy with a lot of strength. And if he comes back, he's going to remember who put him in there. So I think that's something that people have begun to really take note of.
I also wonder if there's some sense of I certainly don't remember what season it was, but Mark Long came back for one like final season, and it really felt like everyone was just kind of giving him a free pass to the finals. I don't think Bananas has that to virtually any extent, but I do feel like people are a lot more reluctant to throw CT in, almost out of respect.
Yeah, no, I think CT really does. He kind of commands respect. And then like the few people that do say his name, like that we've seen so far this season, have already paid for it in the form of CT, like being able to throw them in. So he has friends too. That's the other thing. That's the scariest part, is that here's a guy with friends who's so dangerous in this game.
I would say, I would say both Bananas and CT seem almost more likely than not to make the finals to me on any, just entering any random season that they play at this point.
Yeah. You know, and CT took a lot of seasons off, and that's why I think a lot of seasons it seemed so frustrating with Bananas, is he was in there with a lot of new blood. There were no Durrells, there were no CTs. I mean, these guys really do represent, and I think Derek Kay too. I mean, you know, we've seen in several of these challenges already. I mean, despite his age, these guys actually represent legitimate opposition to Bananas. These are, you know, really, really physical, capable guys that have done multiple seasons of this show. Might not have been necessarily recently, but they know what they're doing.
Totally. And I mean, I actually now I'm realizing I felt like I love Durrell in what the few seasons I've seen him on. I'd heard much more about Durrell than I'd ever seen, because his heyday where he won, I think, four straight. Check the spreadsheet to make sure that's right. I was not watching the show at that point. And then I also didn't watch the Champs versus Pros, which he won that too as well, right? I feel like I'm the one jinxing Durrell. Every season he's on that I watch, he's either not there or he loses whenever I watch. But when I'm not watching, he just wins effortlessly.
That's funny. Yeah, he was a monster back in the day. I mean, you know, the early iterations of the challenge were coming out of, you know, all these seasons of Real World and all these seasons of Road Rules. These were the two, you know, hit reality shows that MTV had, really the first reality shows you know, I mean, that's really kind of when game shows, there were game shows, and then kind of these types of shows began to creep up, and then Survivor kind of fused the two in a lot of ways, I feel like. But you know, the Real World and Road Rules started creeping up in the early 90s, and the more of these seasons that you had, the more alumni you would get, and the alumni began to talk and say, like, you know, Road Rules would kick Real World's ass and blah blah blah. I mean, that's of course what's going to happen. So eventually they decide to put it to the test and they create the challenge. But I mean, it really was Real World versus Road Rules for many seasons, until, you know, Road Rules gets discontinued and they just stop having that crop of people to keep pulling from, while Real World just keeps replenishing.
Yeah.
But man, in those old seasons, Road Rules was dominant. I mean, consistently dominant, and a huge, huge part of their dominance was Durrell. I mean, Durrell would just put that Road Rules team on his back pretty regularly. You would see him every season on the Road Rules. He was a staple, and you just knew it was going to be like, yeah, Durrell's Road Rules team against the Miz's Real World team, and Durrell just pretty consistently came up on top. The Miz was like the lovable loser, which is, you know, funny because the Miz has gone on to have a very successful, like, you know, professional athletic-ish career, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Is he the most successful Real World or Road Rules alum?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he was WWE champion at one point. That's huge. That's like international acclaim. If you get to that belt, that means your position within the company is solidified to the point where, yeah, he's a really noteworthy personality these days.
Okay. I didn't know if there was some, like, Elizabeth Hasselbeck figure who ran that I didn't even know was on the Real World that's like famous for something else or something.
I mean, like way back, I guess there was a guy from like either Real World 1 or Real World 2 that's now a senator. So that's pretty huge. What's his name? Sean. Gosh, I forget his name. I don't want to speak out of turn there. But yeah, that's definitely true. There's a congressman or a senator. I don't keep track on that. I can sit here and tell you that, you know, if you count the champs versus pros, that Durrell still, even with this elimination this season, which, you know, kind of disheartened. I was surprised to see him go out so early, but he still won 5 of the 9 seasons he's participated in, which is just crazy impressive to me. And I thought it was just kind of poetic how, you know, in Champs versus Pros, it's him and Kara standing at the end winning together. Kara's initial season, Fresh Meat, she ends up with Darrell. And somehow, I mean, looking back, I don't know how this happened, but they're the first team out.
What?
So, like, if you go back and watch Fresh Meat, Kara and Darrell are the first team eliminated. And, like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, what a stacked combo. They're taken out by Wes and Casey. And it's just, like, it's just so insane in hindsight. I mean, I guess, in fairness, Kara really has improved since back then. Like, she works out like crazy now, and she's much, like, bigger and much more capable in terms of cardio than she used to be. But, yeah, no, going back and watching Fresh Meat is a trip because of that. So, yeah, it's kind of poetic justice to see those two team up again for a finale and come out on top this
you,
one.
Yeah, one of the you mentioned Wes. Where's Wes on this season?
Yes, I agree. All I can figure is that, you know, every time Wes has been on in the last few years, he talks about his many businesses and all the things he's got going on in terms of him being a, you know, a philanthropist and an entrepreneur. So I can only assume that a lot of that stuff kept him occupied because, yeah, I mean, if you're talking about we're going to bring on all the dirtiest players, I think you have to have Wes on here. I mean, Wes is the guy that, you know, he could have a majority alliance with, you know, the veterans, and that's not even good enough for him because he just doesn't want to see those people succeed anymore. I mean, he's a great foil, and that's why I thought it was awesome to see Devin back. He to me is very much like a modern Wes, and it was a shame to see him go out early. I mean, really, the early game really did kind of create a dynamic where you had to be a certain degree of physical and capable in these challenges if you were going to not just go immediately to the Redemption House, and the Redemption House was a physical challenge to come back. So Devin was kind of hamstrung from the beginning on this season. I think he was never really able to do what he does best, which is like politic, to save his life.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think just going back to, I guess, the challenge as a general kind of game format, are you cool with the final being essentially 100% physical? Like, you'll get some puzzles in there, but they all have pretty low-key time limits or whatever. You're not going to ever win or even do better than last place in the final if you are not in, like, really peak physical condition, which I think really limits the upside for people like Devin or like Anissa. We've seen whatever number challenge she's on. I don't think she's ever drawing live to win any of these. Is that okay with you because it's been part of the show the whole time?
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I feel like the nature of the show is like we have these epic finales where it just culminates with somebody planting a flag on a mountain somewhere.
Yeah.
I do feel like just that's kind of iconic of this show at this point. And, you know, I guess all you can do if you're those people, right, is like if you're going to be someone like that and play the challenge, then you have to surround yourself in the end game with other weaker, you know, non-cardio-esque people. So, like, if you're Anissa, I think you want to, like Veronica, she hasn't played in a long time. She's from back in the day. Maybe she doesn't, you know, run like she used to. Let's keep her around. And Jemmy, we know Jemmy is not somebody that's, you know, traditionally done well in these cardio events. So I think that's your play, is that you have to eliminate the big threats for that early on if you want to stand a good chance. Because, yeah, I mean, that's a big element of all this stuff. Although I have to say, in the recent season, like certainly Invasion of the Champions, it was like a 3-day finale, and, you know, each day each guy paired up with a different girl, so, you know, it was rotated, and there was a puzzle component on each day, and some of those, like, those really did, I think, make or break the final for that season.
Okay.
So, I, you know, maybe they are leaning more into the idea that you have to at least be, like, some degree of puzzle capable, which, like, if that's true, that spells doom for Corey, because that dude times out on 100% of puzzles. It's insane.
I mean, I remember prior to Fresh Meat 2, the one challenge season that I watched way back in the day was the original Battle of the Sexes. And I remember that final took like half an hour. It was just them running around the beach, Johnny Mosley yelling at them or whatever. When did it transition into you're going to take 3 days and stay up for 60 hours straight and summit a mountain to win the 125 grand or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, that's really, I think, the TJ Lavin era, but it's just gotten progressively – like, they try to, you know, outdo themselves each time.
Oh, so I remember it's like Big Brother in that respect.
Yeah, absolutely. So I remember one time where there was, like – they were like, this finale is sponsored by the Army. Like, this is the Army Strong final challenge. And I want to say that was, like, you know – well, this is 30. I want to say that was like maybe the early 20s. So I feel like from that point on, you know, that was the first time like they kayaked and then they climbed. They did all this stuff. And, you know, there was food challenge in the middle, you know, so they did all of the stuff you'd associate with the modern kind of epic challenge. And from that point on, it just grew in terms of scale. So, you know, the distance got longer and the amount of stuff was, you know, escalated. And then one season they made it an overnight thing. Like all of a sudden you're going to have to stand on logs and one person is going to stand on log. The other person can sleep. But if you come off the log, you're losing time. And then I remember one time they did like exercise bikes, but they found ways to then like, you know, going forward, it's now an overnight thing. And then, you know, it just stretched into now. Yeah, you're right. It's become like a 3-day, 2-night just bender of a just unbelievable thing where, yeah, I mean, I guess they really go all out. And yeah. I do love that. I mean, if I'm going to show anyone an episode of reality TV, like there's definitely an argument I can make for why it should be like one of the better challenge finales.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that there's a timeline now where they scale it back, or are we now committed to every final is going to be 3 or more days?
I feel like it would be hard to scale it back. Like that's the thing. It's they've kind of dug this hole and now they're like, well, it's really deep. I guess we're going to have to dig our way out the other side. It's just going to keep going. You know, right. Like they don't have an exit strategy as far as that goes. So, yeah, I don't know what else you do unless you just, like, change up the format entirely.
Well, maybe one thing they can do is now that this one's for $1 million, this will definitely be, like, some all-time insane finale or final challenge. Maybe they can say once they scale the prize money back, they'll scale it back to 2 days.
Yeah, that's something they could do. Or, yeah, I mean, they could just, yeah, find other ways to do it. Like, you know, they always relocate for, like, the final challenge. Maybe it'd be interesting to, like – tell them to just relocate on their own and incorporate that into their time. And now it's like part of the Amazing Race.
the final leg is now you have to run from Venezuela to Chile. First team that makes it there wins. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just get there. Like there's just no restrictions whatsoever. There's no rules. But there's no money either. So just like find a way, steal someone's llama, do what you got to do.
That's another thing I wanted to bring up is the money that they're doing this season. They're keeping it a secret that they're playing for way more than they actually think they're playing for. Shouldn't they be doing the opposite if they want to be like the dirty season? Shouldn't it be like they tell them they're playing for $350,000 or whatever, but instead they show up to the final and they're like, all right, first place is $5,000. Second place is an autographed TJ Lavin flat brim. And third place is you can never be on the challenge again.
That would be very dirty.
That's what the move is. That's how you torture them. Yeah. It's not a surprise. It's not bad news. They're all going to be jumping for joy when you reveal this monstrous twist on them.
Yeah, I guess the idea is that when you drop this twist, it's going to ratchet up the level of intensity, right? Like we're already seeing people willing to cut the throats of friends and stuff like that. I think, you know, TJ is going to drop that mid-season as just like a reminder, like a potent reminder, like Derek coming into the Big Brother house. It's just like, don't forget what you're playing for, you know, just like something to just kind of re-incentivize everyone who's still left in the game. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I get why they're doing it. I mean, the thing I enjoyed about it more than anything is that it allowed TJ Lavin to have like the first confessional of the season, which like, when do you ever see a host of one of these shows give an actual confessional? Like to me, that was really cool. Like I just in that moment, I felt like it was like a huge reality TV moment where I'm like, whoa, you never see Jeff Probst set aside like, all right, what the players don't know. Like we just don't get that.
Yeah, I guess in like Borneo, they did have introductory shots of Jeff like setting up what an immunity challenge even was.
That's
you're totally
true.
Right. That, no, I mean, you're totally right. Nothing in the last 17 years that you missed a reference towards. It's always weird to me on like premiere night in Big Brother to see Julie in the house looks weird, let alone to see TJ giving a diary room or whatever. Speaking of money, actually, what does, if you even know, someone like Anissa, who's on whatever attempt, 13 or 14 at winning a challenge, what's in it for her? Does she get a solid stipend just for going back when it's been this many times?
I don't think that she gets a particularly big – I assume they get something. I don't think she gets much of anything. I think if you're talking about Anissa, the bulk of her winnings came back in the day. The old school structure really used to be a lot more, and we've seen some recent seasons where the structure's been this way. I mean, that's one thing about the challenges. They really do diversify their format a lot from season to season. But a lot of the old school seasons, whether it was, you know, good guys versus badasses in, you know, the Inferno, or before that with the just real world road rule seasons, each individual challenge was worth, you know, $5,000 or something like that. And then with a team win, that money would go into your like individual team bank account. And so while like Anissa has never won one of these seasons that she's been in 12 of, like she has made 3 finales. She has finished second. She came in 3rd in the duel too, which was an individual season. So that actually was like a pretty solid cash. And that was a situation where, yeah, ultimately they get to the finale and she really is like kind of a, like she's just so far behind the other two girls. And is a big piece of why Mark Long finishes so far in last, because they have to work with the people that come in order. But yeah, I mean, I think when you're talking about Anissa, I think she won a lot. Probably not all that recently, but the knowledge that like all that money is on the table is going to keep bringing her back if she gets the invite. I mean, you couple that with the fact that I think she does bring an interesting presence to the show, which is like she is very physical. She's not afraid of confrontation. And I mean, there have been some moments where she has illustrated that, you know, if you get her in some of these eliminations with some girls that just don't have the weight that she can, you know, bring just in terms of like the muscle and just kind of, you know, physicality. That, you know, but she's really dangerous to, you know, potentially almost anyone in these eliminations. I think only like Kara and Laurel seem like the two that can really like size up with her if it ever really comes to that.
Yeah, I definitely do really like having Anissa on the show on a lot of the seasons. I just have always wondered, like, it seems like she would be aware at this point that she's probably not going to win. And I wondered why she kept spending so much time doing these. But yeah, let's get into. You mentioned Laurel. Laurel is just my default winner pick any season she's on. When she's not on the season, give me Cara Maria. What are you thinking about Cara Maria so far this season? And I guess just in general, because it really seems like she's become another one of these like titans out there, certainly among the females.
Yeah, hard to argue with that, I think, definitely. Kara really, and just especially in the last few years, has really just kind of like dedicated herself to the challenge, almost like the female Bananas, where like she does like, I mean, you know, back home she's like an equestrian, she rides horses like every day, but she is also like just training full time, like doing, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and all kinds of stuff. I mean, she is very, very intense in terms of like her preparation for these shows, and it shows. I mean, she didn't used to – you go back and watch Fresh Meat like I'm talking about it. She does not have the cannons that she is sporting today. I mean, she has like massive, massive, massive biceps. And yeah, I mean, some of the stuff she's able to do I think is really impressive. I mean, she can match a lot of these guys a lot of seasons in terms of physical strength. I think, you know, you talked about Kara being a front runner, and I think this season in particular, you look at the female side of the things, like the female field, and there's just not a lot of – the girls that we normally associate with being like the strongest female competitors. I mean, obviously, I think the fact that Sarah like retired from the show post that Bananas thing, like that's a blow. Like Paula and Evelyn were strong competitors. Like they're done. They're not coming back. You talked about not having Laurel. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you're already looking at a situation where I think you're needing hopefully like some of these new girls like Tori and Kayla establishing themselves this season as being what they've kind of been sold as, which are like these are going to be the new tough girls that you're going to, you know, expect to see as regulars. But, I mean, when you look across the board, I mean, Nicole, Jemmy, Marie – you know, a lot of these people have just been on a lot of seasons and have not really distinguished themselves as of yet. And then, you know, Veronica is just such a big X factor because here's a girl that hasn't been on this show in a decade and now she's back. And that's really interesting in and of itself.
Yeah, well, I think one of I would say probably the fiercest competition for Cara Maria at this point. And I can't believe she hasn't come up yet, but I love her on all of the seasons that she's willing to do. The Camillinator still in there.
Yeah.
And she's always got to be a force to be reckoned with. I definitely didn't early in her career give her probably enough credit as an actual challenge competitor, but she has totally proven herself, I think, over the – didn't she win the Invasion of the Champions? And I think she's definitely – in there with a very solid chance this season, even despite a potentially tumultuous social game at times.
Yeah, definitely tumultuous. Yeah, she did win Invasion of the Champions. So, yeah, last full season, she's coming off a win, her and CT. And She really has. I think one factor that can't be understated is that early on, she had a lot more, I think, just fights with everybody and blowups and moments. And I think her English has gotten a lot better. Like, she was, like, just moved from Brazil, I think, when she first started doing these shows. And there was a lot of times, I think, just in, like, miscommunication and misunderstanding. Like, she's such a, like, a type A personality that her default was to, like, assume that they were attacking her. And so I think you'd get a lot of moments where she would feel antagonized and blow up, and it was, like, just totally unnecessary. And I don't think you see that from her as much. And I do feel like her English has gotten a lot better, and that's helped. And then also, I wouldn't say she's calmed down. I mean, she's certainly still the same person. You know, I'm thinking of a moment in Invasion of the Champions where, like, Amanda is, like, saying stuff to her, and Kara's just, like, run out of things to say back. So she just starts, like, showing her ass, like, just, like, sticking her ass towards Amanda and just dancing it. Like, I can't hear you. Yeah. Which is just, like, I mean, that's something like even, like, 6 or 7 year old girls, like, when, like, that's like the 3 year old girl move, like, which is really, really wild. Like, use your words, honey. You know, like, that really is. So, yeah. I mean, you know, Kara does have – I mean, it's so much duality, I think, where, like, sometimes she seems like such a savvy player. I referenced earlier that moment with Jemmy, where she really gets the last word in with Jemmy and says, like, you know, it really would be good to get Jenna in there, and, you know, saves herself, it seems. I mean, it seems like Camilla probably should have been hit with that double cross if she doesn't get in Jemmy's ear. But she does, right at the right moment with the exact right pitch, and manages to save herself in the game. I think one of the great – strategic moments that we've seen in this show in recent times. So Camilla brings a lot to the table. She's a very, very interesting character.
Yeah, she's fantastic. She's I how old is Camilla? I would believe you if you said 27 or 33.
Yeah, I feel like I would lean towards 27, but it's probably like 28 or 29.
Yeah, I don't mean she looks old. I just mean I feel like I've seen her around for a lot of seasons, but I also know people start when they're like 20 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Camilla is an interesting case because Camilla is the only person who can say, you know, there was her first season wasn't even a season. The first time you saw Camilla was actually on a mini competition that they did during one of the MTV spring breaks, which was just the challenge spring break, where they just found like some spring break people who were there at the beach to do these competitions. And they were so enamored with Camilla, they brought her back for an actual season. So, you know, Camilla is a very interesting case where it's like she's, you know, and then they brought her back again and used her as fresh meat in the Battle of the Seasons. But technically she was never on a fresh meat season. She just was fresh meat in the sense that she doesn't have a home in the way of real world or road rules. So Camilla is this interesting case where, you know, her origin to this show is very just kind of random and inauspicious, but she really has established herself and just kind of is like one of the people that you expect to see more than almost any other in a given season.
Yeah, I definitely am still loving having Camilla on as many seasons as they want to put her on. I think she adds a really valuable and unique quality to every season that she's a part of. A couple
yeah,
of
and
these.
This would be her 10th. This would be her 10th season, by the way, if you don't count the mini season.
Wow. Okay. So that's a lot.
It's getting up there.
Yeah. A couple other people that have come up a little bit, but just to round out these kind of like longtime vets, you just mentioned Veronica, who took a decade off or whatever. I barely remember her from if I even saw her in the first place. Why is she back? What's brought her back after so much time off?
You know, I don't know. I feel like it's something where maybe the timing was right for her. Maybe they decided to extend the invite after a long time where they really hadn't. I feel like it's got to be some combination of the two, where maybe they've extended the invite before, but
– yeah, sorry. Maybe it's because they don't have a lot of the like Sarah and Laurel and Paula and Evelyn like representing that generation of players.
It could be, but I think they almost represent the generation that came after Veronica, which is why it's so interesting to me. Veronica is actually, I think, a really fascinating choice because – you know, if you haven't seen like some of that really, really old school stuff, I mean, she was a really dominant player in the seasons where it really wasn't an individual game. I mean, we've never really seen Veronica have to play in one of these seasons where it's not just like teams, like big teams. But in these big team games, she was dominant. I mean, she had a lot of wins with that Road Rules team. I mean, like I talked about, you just associate Darrell with those Road Rules victories. Veronica, same boat. It was Darrell, it was Veronica's buddy Rachel, who's just a physical beast. It was, you know, it was a lot of the same regulars that would just be on this Road Rules squad that would consistently show up and beat Real World when it counted in the final. So, I mean, Veronica, despite, you know, this is her ninth season, but she's got three wins if you count those old school Road Rules seasons, which you have to. I mean, team wins are wins. So, you know, she's someone that I think more than any of these girls here can really play a strong social game. I think she recognizes this game for what it is in terms of the social aspect. She was always so good at staying out of elimination. I mean, she had her Road Rules girls click, and breaking into it was almost impossible. I mean, we have seen her talk about how she has to kind of work her way into this new school dynamic because none of her girls, you know, the people she would always work with back then are around, the Tinas and the Rachels. But, you know, I don't think she's missed a beat. And I think she's like very, very sharp when it comes to keeping herself out of danger in these games.
Okay, so Veronica definitely has been someone I've been sleeping on big time to this point in this season. I thought she was in there almost to be like lower key fodder to a certain extent, but it really sounds like she could be in there deep and with a real chance to win.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I think the only big question mark with Veronica is like her physicality at this point. But even back in the day, I mean, she could definitely handle a final. Like I said, I mean, she's run four finals in her nine seasons, and she won three of them. So, I mean, you know, even then they were going pretty long distances. I mean, we've seen that she's capable of, you know, cardio, and I know for a fact she's capable of, you know, maintaining a majority and kind of manipulating numbers. So, yeah, I mean, I think the only thing that remains to be seen is, like, will it translate after all this time that's been removed?
Okay. Definitely happy to keep an eye out on that. The only other person that I put in this kind of status is like these longtime lifer challenge players is Derek, who's come up a little bit, but tell me a little more about how you think Derek could do in this particular environment, because he's always been someone I've really enjoyed watching. He's always such a fun and like scrappy competitor, and he always seems to be in there with a real shot, but I don't feel like I have a lot of vivid recollection of Derek like celebrating victory.
Yeah, well, I mean, Derek's an interesting case because for so long, and you know, it's like when I first started watching the challenge, my memory of Derek is as like the young kid who just can't break into the vets club, which is like, I mean, now Derek is like the oldest guy on this season besides CT in terms of tenure. So, you know, I mean, obviously Bananas has been on more seasons, but his Real World season was, you know, later than these guys played. Derek was on one of the last Road Rule seasons they ever made. But yeah, I mean, Derek is, it's so funny because, you know, in those early seasons, you know, it was Mark Long and Timmy and Theo Vaughn, who's now a great comedian who has a Netflix special. I saw him actually the other day at the Comedy Store. A lot of these guys just like were the establishment at that point. And Derek just couldn't break in. He just kept getting thrown into elimination. He had to keep fighting against bigger guys, improving himself. So it's interesting now to see him as like the established veteran. But he has been this way now for a while. And yeah, you know, I think the thing with Derek is he has been gone for a while too, but he did have a good amount of success. I mean, he's won three challenges.
Okay.
The thing is, all his wins were like team wins. It's kind of a Veronica situation. I do kind of feel like Derek and Veronica are question marks for the exact same reason, in that like Derek always impressed me in terms of like, I know you can run a final. I know you can compete. I'm not worried about what you can do in one of these challenges or maybe even an elimination. Will it translate after all the time off? And then also, like with Derek, way more than Veronica, can you navigate like the modern social game? Because Veronica was always very good at getting in with the right people to make sure that she would survive another round.
Yeah.
Derek is very afraid to ruffle feathers. And then when it's his time, he's like, oh, screw it. I'll just go in and beat everybody. So Derek doesn't have the same upside that Veronica does in terms of the non-physical stuff. But I would argue that in terms of eliminations, I mean, Derek is, you know, I think one of the all-time greats in terms of, you know, winning elimination challenges. Veronica's only ever won just this one eliminated. This was her first elimination victory. Or no, she's got one. She's got one coming into this season. So that tells you, I mean, that seems like it's, you know, she keeps losing. But really, it's not a testament to her losing. It's a testament to how good she was at staying out of elimination.
Right. Yeah. How many losses does she have?
She would get to the end. Yeah, like one, maybe two, if that. So it's like every season she would get herself to the end without having to do the work, which is, I think, maybe more impressive. So, you know, with Derek, he's got like 7 or 8 elimination wins. I mean, this is a guy who, if he does end up getting thrown in, he's not going to have any issues with, I think, a lot of these guys. We'll just see. I mean, the question mark again, like I said, he's a dad now. He's older. But it hasn't been as long of a time off for Derek as it has for Veronica. With him, I think it's only been like 4 or 5 years.
Oh, okay. Okay, 4 or 5 years. Yeah, not seasons. Because I remember I hadn't thought about this in years and years, but you mentioning all of the vets would just keep throwing Derek in reminded me – I don't remember what season it was, but I feel like Derek was on it, and maybe even one of the people doing this. One team kept losing, and their best player by far was Brandon, who just happened to be a rookie, and they kept throwing him in even though he was like the only one getting anything done for their team, and TJ was like openly like, what are you guys doing? What season was that?
Cutthroat, I believe.
What? Where's Brandon? I loved Brandon.
Brandon Nelson, right? Yeah. No, that guy was fun. And, well, the crazy thing about that season is that team, that red team, ended up going on to win the season. So somehow they were able to cut Brandon and be better for it. But I agree with you. I think Brandon's a really great competitor. I think he just – he kind of gets lost in the fold a little bit where he was from – he got like 3 seasons, I think, and he just didn't make like a huge impact. Like, he's one of these guys that, like, I look at my spreadsheet in terms of like how I rank people, and he's like lower than I wish he was, because I feel like I really enjoyed his presence on the show. But in terms of like, you know, him going into eliminations, like, you know, he took out 3 people, but he's probably like 3 and 4 or 3 and 5 in eliminations. So, you know, he's been on 5 seasons now, and he hasn't made a final. So I think that really hurts him where, you know, despite the compelling – how compelling he's been, he hasn't been able to do what you need to do by your 4th or 5th challenge, which is like beat a few people and establish yourself to where nobody's really – or people have some degree of fear in coming after you. That never really – he didn't get to that point.
Who – can you read off who your like top 5 guys and girls are for like all time wanting to see them on the show?
Just enjoying them?
Yeah, just enjoy whatever ranking you referenced. I'd love to hear the top of those lists.
I mean, I don't really have a ranking for that.
Oh, okay.
I just, you know, he's I think, a good example of that.
I thought it was 1 page on your spreadsheet.
No, I was just, like, going to find him, and I'm like, you know, he's in terms of the rankings, I just mean, like, I rank people based on, like, performance.
Okay.
So, like, I assign point value to winning, to knocking somebody out, stuff like that, and then I just, like, I've got an overall – like, obviously, Bananas is just, like, way above everyone else just in terms of sheer volume. But, like, Brandon is down in, like, the early 1 teens, and he's a guy that I wish, like, cracked the top 100 because I enjoy him.
Okay. Is Darrell number 2, or who's number 2 is, like, success?
Yeah. Well, it is Darrell until Invasion of the Champions. CT actually passed him. So that's pretty close. But they're both about, like, 400 points behind Bananas, who has just a lot more wins overall. The thing is, like, I give, like, a tiny amount of points for, like, victories with a large group, like big team victories. Mm-hmm. And I give slightly more for, like, individual or duo wins. Bananas played almost, you know, entirely in an era when it was a lot more – not entirely. I shouldn't say that. But he played an era where a lot more individual and duo comps happened. A lot of, like, CT and Darrell and, like, even some other – like, Veronica especially. A lot of her points are fluff from – like, you could argue they're fluff. I mean, I think – if you contributed a lot to them, like Darrell probably did, then it's not totally fluff. But like, it's just a lot of added up like road rules, team victories that, you know, really do pad the stats, I think, as far as how I do it.
Well, I guess Invasion of the Champions put CT over the top. I'm now worried that we misspoke earlier. What season did Ashley win?
You're right. That was Invasion of the Champions. Camilla came in 2nd with Nelson, and she blamed Corey's lack of puzzle ability.
Okay,
that's right.
I want to transition into this kind of like current generation that I've, the ones that I see coming back over and over, but not yet in that kind of like lifer tier. Ashley was gone very early on this season, but I thought I was trying to remember. I thought she did win one of them recently, and it seems like that's the one, Invasion of the Champions. Quickly on Ashley, because I am a huge fan of Smashley, and was very disappointed to see her go out so early here. Do we know anything more about what happened with that? Because it really seems like it can't just be over her suitcase getting lost.
I don't really know, to be honest. Did you watch the miniseries, the little the Champs versus Pros?
I didn't watch it.
Okay. All right. So Ashley didn't quit on that, but she threatened to like 2 or 3 times.
Well, she always does that.
But like it was more so. It was like, you know, she like had to be talked out by production. Like it seemed like I just feel like Ashley coming off of Invasion of the Champions, where it was such a long season, she won. And they also had that time, like the early portion of the game was spent on the beach. You remember that, where they were just living in squalor? Yeah. And she is just such a materialistic kind of person, I think, where it's just – I feel like that really took a toll on her, that she didn't allow herself the process. She turned right around and did Invasion of the Champions and then turned – or sorry, did Champs versus Pros and then turned right around again and went out for this. I just think she recognized her own need for a break. Based on what I'm seeing on Twitter, that's her own assessment. But yeah, I mean, I hope it doesn't affect her ability to come back and play. Like, I know TJ is very adamant that, like, you know, if you're somebody who quits these games, like, he has a very low tolerance in terms of bringing you back. But I mean, Ashley, given that she won, given that she is such a volatile personality and they seem to enjoy her anyway, I would hope that that's, not going to be an issue for her. But yeah, as far as, Camilla goes also, you're right. And that's, I think, one of the big, you know, things that is an underlying factor for Camilla. It's like, yeah, she's great. She does seem strong. Girls do seem afraid of her. But this is her 10th season, and her only win came when she was a duo with Bananas, which, like, who can't win as a duo with Bananas?
Yeah. Okay. So I would – yeah, I'm hoping – and I think that we will probably see Ashley again. I think she is probably – not like – numerous quitters have just gone out on one of their early seasons and quit, and that's got to be the end of it for them. But actually, yeah, Someone who's won a season before, I don't think she's going to be labeled, like, branded a quitter in the same way that TJ does for a lot of people. I think the top kind of this current generation of established regulars, I think, like, the three most important people for me in dictating how this franchise is going to kind of look going forward are Corey, Nelson, and Jenna. And I think let's start with Corey and Nelson, because they really seem to be putting themselves at, like, the forefront of the action. They're always out there doing well in the physical competitions. And it really seems like they're desperate to, as I said about Nelson earlier, and I think the same applies to Corey, make names for themselves and be established challenge players and challenge winners. What do you think of just these two and the tone that they're setting this season?
I like this partnership, and I'm glad that the fact that Nelson kind of stabbed Corey in the back towards the end of the last season, Invasion of the Champions, didn't end up ruining the friendship, and that they're working together again, because they need each other. I mean, they're in a house with, like, all these tenured people that have worked together for so many seasons. I mean, now that Derek's back and reunited with Banana, Derek, you know, I talked about, he's won three seasons. I think they all came with Bananas. Derek had come close but no cigar for years and years and years, and then Bananas works with them, and he's able to just rally off, I think it was three straight victories working with Bananas. So, I mean, Derek is the guy who's super incentivized to continue to do that. So, I mean, you've got Derek, you've got Leroy, you've got a lot of Bananas buddies back in action. So Corey and Nelson need each other. And I think they're such a great partnership because they really do represent, like, opposite sides of a coin, where, like, not to say Nelson is physically incapable, but Corey is strategically and socially incapable. I mean, utterly. And Nelson is really actually very underrated, very good at that side of the game. I think Corey is much better than Nelson in terms of physicality, in terms of speed, strength, all that stuff. But Nelson can solve a puzzle, and Nelson can organize numbers. And I think it's very telling that, like, when you see Bananas talk about, like, who he's gunning for with tomatoes or whatever else, that the person he's always aiming for isn't Corey, who's, like, openly said, "I'm coming for you, Bananas," but it's Nelson, who actually, I think, poses a threat to Bananas and Bananas' mind. Bananas is smart enough to recognize that, right, Nelson is the person that he should really be afraid of, because Nelson is the one, whereas Corey's a lot of bluster and talk, Nelson is the one who knows what needs to happen to turn things around, and as a result could potentially find himself in a position where he might be able to do that. I think it was really compelling to see that Nelson won power and put himself in a position where he very easily could have taken the shot, but had the wherewithal to hold his cards, say, like, am I really going to put Johnny in against Ammo right now? I mean, granted, Ammo didn't end up pulling the upset. I just don't feel like Ammo pulls that upset against Bananas. I think Nelson made a tremendous call by putting in Bananas' dumbest ally, who might be most likely to misinterpret directions or do something stupid that he might regret, in Tony. I mean, Nelson just made the perfect, perfect call. And I saw a lot of backlash on Twitter, and a lot of, you know, people on the show and their confessionals are giving him crap for not having the balls to take the shot. But man, I can't talk enough about how good a move I thought that was, because, yeah, I mean, if you look at it on paper, Tony, I mean, for all the talk of, like, he's in with the Bananas crew, he's an established veteran, he's, like, an established name in the challenge, and he did beat Terrell. I don't want to take that from him. But he's now been on – this is his fourth season, and he has gone out early in all three of his previous seasons. And technically, he went out early in this season. He just managed to come back. So I think that was a great, great call. I can't say enough about it.
Yeah, I totally am with that. I think Corey and Nelson are being set up to be like the future people carrying this franchise, I would imagine. And I said – I think you're spot on, by the way, just about both Corey and Nelson. I'm happy that they are both going to probably be, fixtures on the challenge for years to come. And I said the same thing about Jenna. And I am personally someone who absolutely loves Jenna, but I know that she's maybe not. I don't want to say not entertaining, but I don't think she's like dynamic in the same way that a lot of the other people, the way that like Kara is or like Camilla is. I think Jenna is a lot lower key, but really does seem to be establishing herself as a power player. Early in her career, it seemed like she was just going along with Zach. I know they were dating for a long time and did a lot to aid Bananas along his quest to a lot of these victories. I don't know if that's going to stay the case for too long with Jenna. I really feel like she could become someone I'm hoping leading some of these sides, maybe not against Bananas now or against Corey and Nelson down the line in the years from now. But I'm really excited about the prospect of Jenna being one of these longtime recurring players on the challenge. Are you with me on that, or are you someone who finds her a little less exciting than most?
I'm mostly with you. I'm probably not as bullish on Jenna as you are, but I'm more bullish than I think a lot of people. I think Jenna is one of these people that is, you go one way or another. You know, she's very, what's that word? Whatever.
Polarizing?
She is
one of these
she's very polarizing in this way. I'm like, it's not bipolarizing. What am I saying here?
I think it's just such a funny combination between Jenna's kind of affect and the way that they handle her edit-wise. Plus, she goes out there and then just often can beast these competitions. I think it's great.
Right. And I feel like everyone can respect her physicality, right? Like, that's something anyone can get behind. I thought it was really amazing to watch in these, like, redemption, challenges that they had to come back into the game. I mean, it was a fight, obviously. Nobody like got anything for free. But whereas like all the guys' challenges ended up with both guys falling in the water, and it was like who touched first. Mm-hmm. Both of Jenna's fights, Jenna just pushed the other girl in the water and stayed dry on the platform. I mean, that is really impressive. Amanda's no joke. We've seen Amanda go really deep in these shows, and she fights very hard, clearly. So I mean, I think it really shows how tough Jenna is. I think the thing about Jenna being polarizing as a character is it comes down to one thing, really. It's like, can you get past the fact that she's clearly really, really dumb? And like, if you can, and that doesn't bother you, and you can find humor in, her misinterpreting things or getting things wrong and then maybe somehow ending up figuring it out anyway or whatever it happens, then you probably end up enjoying Jenna. And I feel like if you're someone who's just frustrated by that level of stupidity and her just kind of never knowing what's going on or never knowing what, when she should make a move strategically, then I think that's something that I could see why you wouldn't enjoy Jenna. But I think this season now especially is interesting because now that she's come back in the house, she seems to have, this new mindset of like, I really need to not be thinking about these people in terms of friends because they're not thinking about me this way. I need to be playing this in a way that best benefits my ability to get to the end. And that's great. I mean, that's awesome. That's a strong step in the evolution of Jenna's game. If she does indeed have that part figured out, the only obstacle remaining in her path is food challenges. Because you just know at some point there's going to be eating in every finale. And up to now, she's demonstrated she quits with everyone. She just cannot do it. And it does sound like from what she says, like when she goes back home and just eats, hot dogs and chicken tenders and fries. So she doesn't like train at this, which is really what she needs to do. This is the one thing she should be training at, because it seems like the only thing other girls can even like hold a candle to her in at this point that aren't Laurel for a lot of this stuff.
Am I making up that Jenna once won the trivia competition?
Yep. I believe that's right. So, okay. That was a moment that, it definitely surprised me. But I think it shows that, book smarts and street smarts, not necessarily the same thing. I think Jenna is more the kind of person that, like, is not sure what's going on around her as opposed to, like, she can retain facts, it seems like.
Okay, yeah. I'm someone who is, I think, made peace with the character Jenna. And that's why I think I've enjoyed it from the beginning. And that's why I'm so high on her. I think they've done a good job of presenting her in a way that, for me at least, makes her very likable and rootable. Other than when she's enabling Zach.
Yeah, well, I had to come around, right? Like, I think early on I was frustrated with just, like, it really seems like she's just kind of setting up Zach for wins. I mean, she's really, you know, especially in these seasons where, like, guys vote for girls, girls vote for guys. I mean, it's powerful to have that kind of dynamic going on. And she's just, like, so forgiving and really doesn't seem to want to, like, play the game, you know, the way yeah. maybe she needs to play to succeed. But it doesn't seem to matter for her because she's really good physically. These other girls are afraid of her and stay away from her. So she does end up getting to these finales. I mean, she's been in a lot of finales in recent seasons. And now it's just a matter of getting over that hump and winning.
Yeah, I think it was – her first season was when she and Jay went on as a pair, right? Yeah. And then kind of got dragged to the end. I think I just liked that
– Jay, who later went on to play Sequester, as a matter of fact.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I think I just liked them being in there, like the strategic element of having this couple that everyone knew to drag. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that was great. And, you know, we've seen that, I think, more in recent times. You know, and we've seen that in seasons before that one, but that was a really notable example because I think not only was it an idea that was thrown around, but it worked. It came together and it worked out perfectly. I mean, they literally quit the final. So, I mean,
they quit on day one.
Yeah, yeah, right. There was a whole nother day to go and they're just like, nah, we're not going to. So they didn't even get their money. So, yeah, I mean, that was a dream team to take to the end. And yeah, I mean, that's still her obstacle. You know, I think that time they were in like, Sweden or Finland or something. So the gross food was like Icelandic based. So it was like a lot of cold pickled fish in like tubes and stuff like that, like just gross fish paste, which yeah. like I get it. It's gross. But like this is the show that you can't be like, oh, well, I'm really good at the physical stuff. You know, like what you have to realize at some point, Jenna, is that this is a component of this crazy, ridiculous game. And like you got to get that. You got to have that card in your deck. You just do.
Yeah, I do. I do definitely question, certainly when it comes to gross food, and that just makes me nervous about her general, not only gross food, but just general kind of want it more when it comes to things.
Hard to
in
bet
the
on her as a winner,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Especially when she's going against these people like Kara or like Bananas potentially. I guess she's not going against Bananas in a final, but you know what I'm saying. Where there are a lot of people who seem to truly want nothing more in life than to win this season of the challenge.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think even the girl that she knocked out in the Redemption House, I think Amanda is the kind of girl that we've just seen, like, just devour this food. I mean, Amanda does not care. She is hungry for this money. I mean, she gave it all she could. Jenna was just too tough for her. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think that just needs to be – she needs to get that fire in her in those moments and just kind of close her eyes and deal.
Yeah. I know you already talked a little bit about Leroy being one of your favorites. I'm definitely on board with
yes.
that. Another person I think is in kind of a similar camp for me, although I still I'm less in love with him than I am with Leroy. But I think he's really fun, what both of them kind of bring to the show. Dario I am enjoying on this season as well. Are you a fan of Dario?
He's all right. Little Alex Rodriguez.
Or big Alex Rodriguez, depending on which way you look at it.
Yeah, I could never get over that. You know, I'm not somebody who watches Are You the One or like any of the new Real World seasons, just to hedge my bet. I think he's Are You the One, but I didn't watch like Real World Skeletons or any of this new stuff either.
I don't know either. I watch is The Challenge.
At a point, I couldn't tell you who's from a really new Real World season and who's from Are You the One, but I'm pretty sure Dario's on Are You the One. And yeah, I mean, I just could never really get over the fact that like the first season he's on, right, was Bloodlines, and he's on with his twin brother, Rafi. And I mean, I really enjoyed their dynamic. I thought they were a lot of fun. They really do. I mean, I couldn't really tell them apart that whole season. But Dario just, I mean, in an astronomical way, biffs their elimination. I mean, it's all Dario. And he's – or you know, Rafi's the one competing. And Rafi's winning. And then Dario starts jumping on him and celebrating prematurely and gets them eliminated. So I've always felt like in the back of my head, I'm like, man, screw Dario because Rafi's the one that really got screwed. And Rafi – in their dynamic that season seemed like the alpha of the two. Like, I'm just like, I've had this just feeling in the back of my head ever since. I'm like, why didn't they cast Rafi on these shows and not his brother? Because Rafi seems like the one I want to watch.
Yeah.
But, you know, they brought back Nicole this season without Nani, which is an interesting call. I didn't necessarily expect them to do that stuff. And they did bring Jamie, Kara's cousin, back on a season without Kara. So I would hope we see Rafi back, whether or not it's with Dario or without him. But As far as just Dario himself, beyond, like I said, beyond me knowing him as like the twin that, you know, they were just arguing all the time and playing off each other, I don't feel like he's really established himself on these shows. You know, this is his fourth challenge, but he's only got one elimination under his belt and he really just hasn't made much of an impact. I think he's kind of like Tony, where it's just like they're these new school guys that have come on a lot and now people talk about them as though like their name carries a little weight, like they're a little bit established. But I'm like, to watch, I'm like, stop trying to make like Dario and Tony happen. Like they haven't done enough yet for me to like warrant that degree of noteworthiness.
Okay, so would you have him not even in the same tier as like Corey and Nelson?
No, I definitely wouldn't. Because Corey and Nelson each have a second place in their belts. They've each run a final, and Dario hasn't even made a final. I think that's a huge moment. It's just like even running your first final, because until you do that, it's just such a insane animal. You know, like you can hear about it, you can watch it, and you can be like, wow, that's crazy. But until you've lived one of those and I've seen you do it and you haven't ended up like in an ambulance, like convulsing and like just heaving all over yourself, then I just have that in the back of my head. Like maybe you can't do all that, because not everyone could do all that. But I've seen Corey do it and I've seen Nelson do it. And to me, that's a big factor.
Okay. I think I just like Dario. I like having to me, he's almost like a much more likable version of Zach. Like I'm okay with having this kind of like big goofball in there.
He's pretty chill.
Yeah, yeah. You're probably right, though, that I'm being unfair in putting him in that. I don't think he's like a lock to be a future franchise superstar as likely as I would say about Corey and Nelson, for sure. And so I guess, would you say Tony is kind of in the same camp as Dario? I guess you may have just said exactly that they need to do more to establish themselves as people to bring back more and more frequently.
Yes, actually, as far as like players still in the game, right, I would put Dario, Tony, and Hunter all in the same boat. Hunter has been on only two. This is only his second season, whereas Dario and Tony have each been on four. But Hunter made a really deep run in Invasion of the Champions his first season. He actually is like one of the last guys eliminated. I think he might be the second to last guy eliminated before the finale. So, I mean, that's, you know, to me, really impressive. That's a deeper run than either Dario or Tony have made in any of their seasons. So, I mean, just for that reason alone, I think Hunter is someone that I would kind of put in the same mix, where like all three of these guys are one good showing away from establishing themselves as mainstays. Mm-hmm. Because clearly it seems like with all three of them, the show wants them to establish themselves. Like they just brought Hunter back for a repeat, like right after his season was over. He's got big, big arms, and this guy's talking about wanting to follow The Miz and make a WWE career for himself. Hunter seems like the kind of guy they want to be able to push if he's going to catch on with the fan base. So, yeah, I mean, I think Dario, Tony, and Hunter, any or all of them, if they were to have successful runs this season, could become the kind of people that you're talking about.
Yeah, and one similar person that I really loved, it's not going to happen this season, but I hope it does soon, and it seems like they want to make it happen soon, is Devin. I think could really cement himself as someone going forward as a big, like, regular challenge player, and I would love that. I think Devin absolutely has Johnny Bananas kind of upside in the diary room, and potentially even in doing season after season after season, just becoming the guy who's on every season.
Yeah, and I think he knows what he needs to do. I mean, I think he is going to go – like, I assume he's going to go home and lift some weights, you know, and just try to get that side of this game down. Because if he had a physical component to his game, he'd be a really, really threatening player. I think Devin is a really interesting component to the house even without that, because he's just so good at social maneuvering. I think it's great to see one person in there who's almost like an X factor in that, like, you know, it's like, you know, this person has like – you know, he's like the one person in there with like an IQ over 100. So like it really gives him some room to just like manipulate and, you know, leverage and just kind of, you know, work his magic in ways that like other people just haven't seen on this show before. They don't really know how to respond to it. And in that one season with him and Cheyenne, I mean, he was able to use it to get himself all the way to the end, even though he wasn't like the Jay and Jen. I mean, people were talking about them like that at a point, but people were planning on targeting him down the stretch, and he was able to like just kind of, you know, win when it counted and leverage relationships to get them to the finale.
Yeah, I'm really growing into a big time Devin fan, and I think like I want to reiterate. I think a big piece of that is he is on a different level when it comes to being funny in the diary room. That I think Bananas. Mm-hmm. I think it's so refreshing to see that out of the players on this show.
Yeah, well, that's the thing too, right? It's like it. that's why you see Bananas keep getting brought back. Is that it's very few and far between the guys they have on this season that or in this show that can really articulate in a meaningful way not only what's happening, but like do it in a way that's entertaining and funny and engaging. And you know, I mean, I think they're hoping that, you know, some of these young guys we're talking about will get there. I mean, if Hunter wants to be in the WWE, he's certainly going to have to get a little more charismatic. But I mean, there's some potential. Certainly, you know, we've seen some potential with Corey and Nelson. I really feel like Invasion of the Champions was such a breakout season for Nelson. I mean, he comes in second to CT, but he really has such a strong run. Down the stretch, he does kind of control the alliance. He makes this masterful game move where he convinces both Shane and Corey to, you know, work together with him to take out the other. And they both basically essentially gift wrap him a victory.
It was incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like genius-esque stuff. I was waiting for Extreme Ways after that.
That was fantastic. And I do want to just say there are a couple other people that I think are in this tier that we'll hit on shortly. But I was rooting for Nelson during last season, even as big of a CT fan as I am.
Right.
Because I am ready for this next generation to start taking control and having it be less of a sure thing. The Bananas and CT are just going to get to the end every time.
Yeah, and that's why I really hope that, you know, Ashley hasn't burned any bridges or that she hasn't lost the fire to come back and play again, because we do. We need, especially on the women's side, man. We get too many of these instances where these girls, like, you know, win two or three and they're like, I'm out. And we just keep replenishing. I mean, we don't have hardly any of the, you know, I mean, I look at my spreadsheet, like I talk about, I just kind of tally wins and, you know, overall, like, tenure really does end up factoring in, and like the top of my leaderboard is just all male. Like it really is unfortunate. Yeah. Like that's just the way it's ended up, where like, you know, the people who are at the top are like you've got Cara and Laurel, you know, up towards there, but you've also got Paula, Evelyn, Sarah Rice, Susie, Coral, Rachel, like some of these people who just, you know, they're not necessarily too old to come and compete, but just for whatever reason they've moved on in their life, or they've, you know, just decided that this is that Emily. Emily was amazing. But she, like, you know, she won two seasons and then she opened up a gym. You know, it's like, so a lot of times they get girls where if they're good enough to be competitors on the challenge, they're also driven enough to want a career like outside the challenge. Right. And I think that's the problem.
Exactly.
And so they just keep going with new, fresh meat with the girls and you don't necessarily know what you're going to get. But I'm encouraged by Tori. And, you know, obviously, I'm sure we'll get into her more later.
Yeah, very soon. The only other people that I have in this kind of like regulars, you know, recurring characters actually were pretty quiet up until this most recent episode and then had a pretty ugly situation go down. We don't need to get too much into that because I don't think there's anything, you know, obviously it was just horrendous stuff being said and completely out of line. And I think Jordan was very quick, you know, very remorseful right away and was just hammered when he said it, not to make excuses for him. But both Jemmy and Jordan, I think, are really interesting people, just their roles within this season, because I think they are, as far as I can tell, in that kind of tier below the Bananas and Caras of the world, but it doesn't seem to me like they're in there with a ton of really solid allies for either of them. What are you making of where each of them stands at this point?
I think they're very different players, because I think Jordan really, like, when I remember when Jordan first came in to this game, like it was Jordan and Marlon. They were teammates from their season of The Real World. And I'm surprised we didn't see Marlon back, because the two of them did very, very well, made it almost to the end, even though it wasn't a layup team. It was a team that was being targeted from the outset. They just kept winning. Jordan was like a blue chip prospect, I felt like, when he first appeared on this show. And he does have that win with Sarah, where like they first notably kind of like, as according to Bananas, they stabbed him in the back. I would argue that they don't owe Bananas anything. I mean, he's never really been much of an ally to Sarah or Jordan. So I mean, he's got a victory, and we know he can run a finale. He can do the cardio. But the thing about Jordan, and we've seen it some this season, is like he doesn't seem interested in playing the social game. That's never really been something that he's keen on. The thing that's managed to keep him out of eliminations most seasons is like he does seem to hook up with a lot of these girls. Like he hooked up with Sarah one season and that took him pretty far when he was a new player. And, you know, there's other instances. I can't remember exactly who, but he's hooked up with like two or three girls on different seasons. And it does seem to like give him a place in the house, especially when girls are voting for guys and vice versa. But, you know, he's also the guy that in his first season was like, Bananas, I'm coming for you. Like he was Corey 5 years ago, basically. Like he just had the worst, just most dreadful social game, and he just didn't care if the numbers weren't in his favor, and he didn't understand that, like, oh well, I'll just beat you guys every time. Like he just He played the game so stupidly. So
it's almost like Jeremy on BB15. Like, yes. I'm just gonna run the table in competitions. It's very easy.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you know, in fairness, that first season he kind of almost did. He almost got to the finale doing that. So I mean, I think it kind of established him like, maybe I can. But I mean, no, you really can't. I mean, the nature of these games usually changes up too much. I think that season had like an extra, like more climbing and, you know, kind of rope stuff than I remember. And Jordan's like really pretty good at that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I just think that he's going to find himself in trouble. He's not in trouble yet because there's an actual opposing contingent to like the powers that be in the house that they actually should worry about. Like, there's some solid numbers over there with like maybe Corey and Nelson and Hunter. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe I don't know if you put Dario on that side. I don't really know where Dario – I think he wants to be in with the Bananas crew. I think he wants to consider himself a veteran the way Tony does. But Jordan, he is a veteran, and they're going to treat him like a veteran until all the new people are gone. But then he's going to find himself without any allies. Whereas, like, Jemmy, I think, is many ways the opposite. I don't know that Jenny could run a final if she had to. I feel like she might not even make it to the end. Like, yeah. Jemmy doesn't have cardio. The few times we've seen Jemmy need to demonstrate cardio, she's finished pretty much dead last every time. So I think Jemmy is not someone that really is like a threat to ever win these things. She has, you know, made a final, and I think it was her and Camilla, now that I think about it, like rivals too or something. So, but they came in third out of three teams. So, I mean, it says a lot. I think she is many ways like a new school Anissa, where it's like, if you get her in a competition where she like severely outweighs the girl and it's physical, like she's not a slouch. Like, she'll beat a bitch up. Like, she's a fighter. She knows how to scrap, and she won't shy away from physical contact, but she's not athletic. She's not like an athlete. Yeah. She's here to drink and party and have a good time and maybe make some money. And, you know, the big difference there, though, is that she actually kind of has a social game. I mean, we saw her try to manipulate the situation a couple weeks ago. I mean, she's going to try to play the game and going to try to, you know, make friends and then leverage those relationships however she can to try to save herself. And the biggest thing that I've noticed about Jemmy, just watching all these seasons, is that in so many instances, and they don't even necessarily make a note of it, but you do see it. And I think it's been touched on this season, which, like, if you ever go back and do rewatches, like, be on the lookout for it if Jemmy's on the season. But like, big fights often are kicked off because Jemmy whispers something in someone's ear. Like, that really is like the catalyst more often than not for things just blowing up in the house. So it is interesting to see. And Jemmy's never like traced back as the source of it. Like, somehow people still confide in her after all this time. People still tell her stuff. But like, if you go back to like that big Anissa Trishel fight, where like Anissa just like stiff arms Trishel in the face and like drops her to the ground because Trishel says something about like, how is Anissa both black and Jewish, which is like a dumb drunk comment to make. It's Jemmy that immediately just walks over to Anissa and is like, hey, are you black and Jewish? Trishel's talking shit, which is like, that Jemmy doesn't need to do that. There's no up, like, but she just goes right for it. I mean, she doesn't miss a beat. So that's what I love about Jemmy, is that she really is like the mosquito in people's ears, that like, stuff gets around. It's usually because Jemmy said something to somebody.
Jemmy seems like an extraordinary shit stirrer, and I definitely buy the new Anissa comparison. I think she is. I would definitely. I agree with you completely that I don't see her winning a final anytime soon. I would definitely be all for having Jemmy on for many seasons to come. And Jordan, I'm with you. When Jordan first came onto the scene, and I still have some hope that this could happen.
Yeah,
I thought he had new Wes upside.
Yeah, but he came in just guns a-blazing. He was winning competitions, and he's saying, like, Bananas, your time is over. And it's just like, oh, man, this is like a burst of fresh energy, you know, but it almost seems like he's been neutered since then, right? Like Bananas has taken some of the fight out of him since then or something.
Yeah, it seems
maybe it's the mustache. He's calmed down.
The mustache is great, but it just continues to strike me. I don't have a great memory of his previous seasons, but who did Jordan work with before? Like, does he have any former allies in this house?
Well, that's the thing. Like, his close ally was Sarah. I mean, his closest allies were kind of these people that have since retired. I mean, so yeah, Jordan doesn't have a lot of people. I feel like, I mean, he has a decent relationship with some of these people. I mean, him and Kara, I'm sure, are amicable enough usually. But yeah, I mean, he didn't come into this game with like the friends that you would, you know, think he might have. He's kind of like from that generation of, I talked about that season, Battle of the Seasons, where Frank and Zach and those guys just, you know, kind of cleaned house, and then Bananas got on Twitter and said like, but you weren't competing against anybody, which then set up in Rivals that Bananas and Frank were teammates because of that Twitter feud. Jordan is kind of from that era where like that season was all nothing but that era, but now we're not really seeing any of those guys. Like, you know, Frank, Zach, that guy Troy, who seemed like he might be decent for a little bit there. There was like a lot of guys who came out of like the St. Thomas, you know, like I don't remember. Just there was this era of Real World there. The not too old, but not too young group, like pre Are You the One, but just barely, where I think Jordan kind of is like the lone representative of that group amongst that cast in the male side. I guess Leroy's kind of in that group too, but yeah. Leroy's done a better job of getting in with the fellas. I mean, Leroy has also been on, I guess this is Leroy's eighth season, whereas if you don't count Champs and Pros, that Jordan's fourth.
Leroy so still doesn't have too. A win, right?
No. And in fact, Leroy's, you know, he's got a second place and a third place. But yeah, I mean, one of Leroy's best performances was his first performance with that nerdy kid Mike.
I remember. I love that.
Underestimated the whole time. Yeah. Yeah. Which is crazy because yeah, they made a finale. They did really well, and like Leroy has, you know, been hard pressed to replicate that since, even though he's had what most people would consider much superior partners and teammates since Mike. I mean, him and Teresa were a pretty formidable team at a point. But that was even a situation where, you know, he was with Naya, and then Naya got expelled, and, you know, Wes and Teresa had been eliminated, so Teresa got to come back with him. But, yeah, I mean, Leroy is somebody, again, that I feel like, you know, he's established himself on this show because he always makes it pretty far in that, like, he's gotten in with the right people, and he usually doesn't have to compete. And he's eliminated Bananas, I think, once. So that's always good. Once or twice. He's got 7 eliminations. So he, you know – he got thrown in, but unlike, you know, Brandon Nelson, who we were talking about, he got thrown in and came back enough times that he really became like a presence on those seasons. Brandon got thrown in and came back like 2 or 3 times each time before he got eliminated. I think in Leroy's early days, he did it like 4 or 5 times. Like those, when you make your mark on a season like that and really like they're just trying to take you out and you keep staying, I mean, that's really, I think, the easiest, fastest way to just like cement yourself on this show as somebody who should be coming back. Are you really? It's like earning your stripes. Like, I think they call it earning your stripes when they talk about sending people in on this show.
Yeah, I was wondering, sorry, how that became a thing. Because right when I first started watching and during that kind of, I guess it was a little while after that, but when Bananas really came into his own and became the guy just running every single season, they kept preaching at the start of every season, oh, the rookies need to go in and earn their stripes. And there were many times where the vets were seemingly very outnumbered, but the whole house would just kind of go with it. And the rookies would say, yeah, I need to go in there and earn my stripes. It was incredible how they just kind of like gaslighted the entire franchise to make that a thing.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because, you know, it's easy to, you know, credit Bananas with that because we've seen him do it so successfully for so long. But if you go way back and watch The Duel, the first Duel, which is like the first time they ever really experimented with an individual format, and it's individual throughout. Bananas is the one who's thrown in immediately against Tyler, his buddy from his Real World season. Bananas and Tyler would go on to win a season together as rivals, and both win without each other too. So, I mean, these are ending up being two, you know, like legit challenge competitors, but it's their first season ever. Paul is thrown in right away because she's just coming out. They were all on Real World Key West together. And yeah, I mean, Bananas is thrown in right away, and they're saying like, you're the new guy, rookie. It's your job to go in there right away and earn your stripes against your best friend because your guy's season just happened. So this happened to Bananas. And I think that's something that you'll find, that a lot of the people who maintain that that's the way it is are people where that's the way it was for them when they first started on this show. And now that they're in the position of power, it's like a fraternity. I mean, you know, it sucks being hazed until you have fraternity letters and you're a member of the group. And now it's like, hey, we get to haze new people every time. Like, this is part of the fun of doing this. So this is a bit of the element where there really is like an element of tenure that you have to earn. And usually the people from the most recent season, the purpose and people who – and every challenge has like 1 or 2 people – who haven't done a challenge before. They're always going to have to go in first a couple times probably and prove themselves. But if those people go early, I mean, then usually they're turning to the people who have only done 1 or 2 or 3 challenges, because at a point, I mean, you're just talking about people who have done like 10 shows together. I mean, how could they not have fostered some kind of advanced relationship that's going to be impossible for you to break in during the time this game is elapsing?
Yeah, I actually maybe – 9 or 10 months ago, watched the duel online, the duel one online. Yes. It was on like Daily Motion, and it was so funny to see Bananas on his first season. He was just called John. He wasn't even Johnny, yep, let alone Johnny Bananas. And the
and
way
the
it worked.
The best performer from that season, from their season on that season, was Svetlana, who then immediately retired. So, like, of all these challenge greats who came from Real World Key West, Paula, Tyler, Bananas, Svetlana outperformed them all and then, you know, got out the game.
Yeah, the way the duel worked, it was like the same format as The Genius, where there was a main match that would produce, yes, a winner and a loser. Or I guess the duel was great, where the winner would pick someone else to be safe. But through process of elimination, one person would be safe. And I think this is the most critical thing that makes The Genius great and what made the duel great is whoever that elimination candidate is picks who they play against. The rest of the house doesn't pick who they play against. They get to choose themselves, which adds a whole different strategic layer to it. Actually, in that Johnny and Tyler showdown, I don't remember which of them was the elimination candidate, but that notion of the rookies need to go in was so strong that whichever of them it was, they were unequivocally closest allies, and they picked, like, Tyler picked Bananas to go against because he was so peer pressured into picking another rookie.
That's exactly right. Yeah, he was trying to establish peer pressure in the house. See, you know your challenge. You've got your history.
I watched that one relatively recently, but yeah.
Gotcha.
Alex, let's dive into some.
Go ahead. Really quickly, I was just on that subject. It also created these interesting dynamics, right? Where, like, because man in the sand is what they call it, right? Where you get to choose. And it would create these interesting dynamics where these big guys, like these MJs and Derek, D-E-R-E-K, who was like a collegiate wrestler, and some of these other guys who were on these seasons, they would continuously pick, like, they would think the weight advantage is really going to be a factor. So that's how, again, like, Derek K, who's back on this season after a good time off, like, he ended up just having to beat so many people in all his old seasons because he was always, like, the little guy. He was just kind of scrappy, but he was smaller than everybody, and they all thought the weight advantage would help them. So when it was man in the sand, he would get picked very often, and he would just continuously beat these big guys, which, again, like, created a great storytelling element.
Yeah. Let's get into some of these up-and-comers that I really hope to see establish themselves. We've talked about Devin, so people that have come up in passing, but I'm with you. I'm very excited about the prospect of them becoming regulars, both Amanda and Tori. Amanda I've seen before on other seasons. Tori, this is my first time seeing her on anything. I don't watch The Real World or Are You the One or anything else. I am really, really excited about both of these two because you mentioned a potential real void in the upcoming female talent. I think these two seem fantastic, like fantastic candidates to fill that.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think even, you know, Kayla, even though we haven't seen it yet, I think the potential is there where I think she's got a lot of physicality. She's not that very, like, smart in terms of the strategy. And I think it's a little frustrating. She seems, like, uninterested in playing the social game. But I have seen, like, she's watching and tweeting Big Brother this whole summer, which I think is really interesting. Like, maybe Kayla's trying to learn. So maybe next time we see her, she'll have, like, taken a crash course in strategy or something. Or maybe not. Maybe that's all in my head. But, you know, I like seeing that Kayla is one of these people who's watching Big Brother, because that tells me, like, oh, she's not just here for TV time or because she's, like, an athlete and she thinks, like, I'm just going to go there and beat up girls and win money. Like, she embraces the, like, strategic reality niche. And anytime I see someone like that, like, again, when Nelson talks about being a fan of the show and, you know, respecting the legacy of the game, like, that always endears me to somebody. So I think I'm excited to see, again, Kayla's somebody that, like, necessarily we can't say based on what she's done that she's going to be a beast. It seems like they fear her already a little bit. So, like, the reputation is there. Obviously, I guess, you know, these people watch each other work out all the time because they're in confined spaces. So maybe her workouts are very impressive. But, yeah, I mean, I think we're just, like, one good, strong season away from, like, a Kayla breakout. And with Jenna coming back, I mean, I think she's poised to do some real damage in this house. I think a lot of these girls are afraid of her.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. Kayla is someone that I liked before but would honestly have forgotten about had she not been brought back again this season. And I'm really impressed with her so far. I've said the same. I'm with you about both.
But how could you forget about how Corey dumped her for peeing the bed?
That's true. I Corey's hookups, there are too many to keep track of for me at this point. But
that was like a It was like a big piece of that that episode I was telling you about. That was like an episode zero or whatever that they released like prior to this season premiering. Okay. One of the main featured points was just like all these hookups of Corey's, and it made me think like that is going to play into this season in terms of the strategy. And man, they're all still around. Camilla, Anissa, Kayla, they're all still hanging.
That's right. I loved that right away. Corey and Anissa like snuck a kiss in the kitchen, and the producers were like, so is he still a good kisser? I don't know what you're talking about. Like they say, and Corey does the same thing where he's like, yeah, me and Camilla just went down and hung out by the beach for a little bit. Like they're not mic'd up or have cameras on them the whole time.
And for the first time ever, we saw like what Big Brother looks like on this show, because the guy walks out from behind the camera with a tablet to show Corey him like hooking up with Camilla. Like, dude, scoreboard, like, look right here. He's just like, all right, man, you got me. Like, that was a great, great moment. I wish more shows would do that, where it's just like, I mean, you know, obviously with like Big Brother, with some things, if it's going to like affect the strategy of the game, you can't really do that. But man, what a great moment in a confessional. Where it's just like, would you like to see the moment you're denying right now?
Yeah, he's like, yeah, this is trick photography. This is don't believe this. This is a hoax.
Oh, the things they do with CGI nowadays. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, another person who's not on this season, but I think has potential on the female side to become a recurring, really fun character was Nicole, not Nani's cousin, but the one from last season as well. I thought she was really good, and I was frankly surprised to not see her back.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways reminded me of a new Evelyn, where it's like, I mean, obviously the fact that she's like, you know, the overt, like in your face lesbian, she like doesn't care. She's going to flirt with the, you know, girls, whether they're, you know, open to that or not. And then they'll, you know, tell her to back off if it comes to that. But surprisingly, they seem to be like very adept at converting straight girls. And then they're also small. They're scrappy. They're like really tough. Like Evelyn, you look at her and yeah, you never would have guessed that she's the girl everyone's afraid of, but she always was. Like she didn't even like really look ripped the way Kara ultimately got, but she could like beat Kara in a fit. Like Evelyn always to me was such an enigma, because she was like my favorite female competitor. She's so intensely physical, but she never really had the outward appearance. It's almost like she was like you know, one of those animes where like people can like bulk up when they need to and then hide their muscles for like, you know, everyday purposes. Like,
it's like that Arya was Stark.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, but so then Nicole, I was like so excited with Nicole, because I'm like, this is someone in that Evelyn mold. She's brash. She's outspoken. She's witty. I mean, she's funny. She's not extremely bright when it comes to like social strategy either, which was another like main thing about Evelyn. It's like Evelyn had to win so many eliminations because she was constantly on the wrong side of the numbers. And when things didn't go her way, she would like beat up things and like break the house. And like she wasn't good with her words, you know, and I think Nicole is another person who like, you know, so we saw her struggle with puzzles and struggle with some of the more cerebral elements of this game. But I think she represents a really awesome person to have in these seasons going forward, because any girl, especially like a smaller girl, like a diminutive girl, when you wouldn't expect that these other girls seem to be wary about calling out into an elimination. I think those are the girls that you need to keep bringing back, because the girls more than the guys on this show seem to try to play a strategy, and they have the opportunity to do it, I guess, you know, that through casting and the lack of just elite female competitive talent that, you know, these girls usually almost every season have like a good crop of girls that they're like, well, we can save her for the end. And they're really trying to game the order of elimination in ways that the guys don't seem to really try to make happen. So, you know, I would like to see kind of more, you know, physical competition on the girl side. I think a lot of people would. And I think Nicole is like a perfect example of like, if we could cast, you know, 8-10 Nicoles, that would be fantastic by me.
Yeah. Any of the other girls from this season, or I guess from recent seasons, that you would really like to see become part of this next generation?
Let's see. From recent seasons.
Like within the realm, not girls that played 5 years ago that you'd like to see get called back, or within the realm of possibility.
Right. Certainly this season, I feel like, you know, Tori, we talked about her a little bit, but I'm really impressed with what I'm seeing. She's coming off Are You the One? So I knew nothing about her. And she's just like immediately establishing herself, which is kind of what you have to do in these games. I mean, we see girls do it more than guys, because the guys, they just keep bringing back the same guys. But like, you know, Svetlana in the duel season I was talking about, where she's like brand new and they throw her in a couple times and she wins a couple times. And girls are like, oh, we better stop throwing her in because she's going to beat us. So then she, you know, kind of finds her place in the house and kind of makes a run. So I think Tori's set up for that. And just, you know, really, I think I'm intrigued by, you know, some of these new guys. I think I like Hunter more than most people simply because I like the element of his physicality. I think it's good to, even if he's not like the best character and hasn't necessarily like popped on TV for me yet, I couldn't help but notice that in like that, the challenge they did most recently this past week where it started out and they have to just like yank a treasure chest across the beach. Like Hunter blows everyone. Yeah. And it's not like he even has like the best partner. He just like blows everyone away. I mean, this guy's arms are massive. And I just think that element alone makes him interesting and compelling because like he's going to compete hard. He's not going to quit. And, you know, he's not very strategic, but God, he's physical. And you need some people that like could even like give us the, you know, like in an elimination against CT, it's nice to think that there's one person where it's like maybe he has a chance if this is a physical thing.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And you mentioned Hunter wanting to do, you know, transition from this into professional wrestling, which I think is possible just given what we've seen in the Big Brother house from the person who aspired to do that. And I think they're cast for similar reasons. Like, I think there is now a casting archetype for, like, super jacked dude. Like, I think Mark on this current Big Brother season was cast because he has, like, 40-inch biceps. And I think Hunter also gets some mileage out of being Southern. There are not a lot of Southern guys on this show. And I, actually, one of my favorites that I would have loved to see more out of, Kahuna. Where's Kahuna at? I loved Kahuna. But I think Hunter really has kind of a niche carved out for himself here.
Yeah, Kahuna is really fun because, like, as someone who has family from Tennessee, like, I know that, like, he's from the Georgia mountains, which is like, man, like, that is country. That is country as it gets out here. So, yeah, I think he's really fun because, you know, he represents a, you know, subgroup of the population that's very rarely represented on these shows. You know, Big Brother will often throw, like, somebody on there that's, like, just kind of one person that's, you know, like Donnie or Judd, who's just, like, small town, you know, South. But
James.
Usually they're just They're just kind of like a caricature of themselves. So yeah, I think Hunter's interesting because, you know, he actually looks like he's in it for the long haul potentially with some of these competitions. Kahuna, you know, he always had the drawback of like, he's fun and he's compelling and he's scrappy and he's going to give it his all, but he is just, no matter who he goes up against in elimination, he's always going to be outsized.
Yeah.
And sooner or later, one of these competitions is going to be like the Oppenheimer or whatever, where someone just like runs him flat over and rings a bell.
Yeah. And I actually have the same concern about someone else that I've actually really taken to this season. Maybe the high point for me was Tony getting his ass beat in that elimination by Ammo. I thought that even though Ammo is now out of the game, I've been really digging Ammo and just the choice to have him on the show in the first place. But what did you make of Ammo?
Yeah, I think it's a great casting choice. I like to see that. You know, I think it is kind of a stereotype in the challenge. I mean, granted, you know, the real world is kind of a show that's always going to lean into casting archetypes to a degree. And I think, you know, we've seen, you know, I give them credit. We've seen this better from the real world than most shows. I think Big Brother's really bad at casting like just very, very stereotypical gay men on their show. But I think, you know, I just always think about Karamo, who was somebody from like back in the day, I want to say Real World Philadelphia, who was just like, I mean, you know, his character and really a big part of kind of who he was, how he sold himself as a person is like, I'm gay, but that doesn't define me. I mean, he walked around wearing like baggy jeans and Tim's and jerseys all the time. And I just thought it was really refreshing to see someone like that represented on TV because it's like, yeah, not all gay men are Frankie Grande. Like, thank you for making this out, making this clear. And like, you know, I've talked to like, you know, some people who are like, I don't want to name names, but I've talked to people who have like played some of these shows in the past and talked about like how frustrating it was where it's like, yeah, production wanted me to say this about this guy's body. And I'm just like, dude, I'm not like a one note gay stereotype, you know? So it really is, I think, is still very difficult when in terms of reality TV to break out as a gay character without being like, hey guys, look at me, you know? So that's why I think it's exciting when the real world kind of goes that route and finds somebody and tries someone new who's kind of like slightly different in the mold of, you know, gay casting or, you know, bi casting or whatever it is. I mean, I think Preston is, you know, an example of like them trying, but like he's always so undersized and so skinny, like it's never going to work out well. I think Ammo, like that was my fear initially, but I was really sold on, again, like this episode zero thing they put out. They showed like little brief video packages of all the new people. And man, Ammo's video package really sold me. He was really talking about like, you know, being duplicitous, being, you know, manipulative, being someone who's not afraid to get his hands dirty and do things. It seems like on his season of The Real World, there was a girl who kind of said something that was like very controversial, like said something about the gay community or about transgender people or something that like really wasn't cool to say and didn't seem very remorseful about it, but it didn't make air or something. So it seemed like she wasn't going to get taken to task for it. And like during their season, Ammo leaked what she said on Twitter, I think. So like Ammo like went above and beyond, yeah, to like get justice. And like his housemates were supportive of him doing it. Like he managed to do it in a way that didn't make everyone feel like he had betrayed the trust of the house. So like that to me was really compelling. Like, man, maybe Ammo's going to be like a bit of like a Devin where he's going to have some social maneuverability in this game. And I think he did. We didn't see it shown much, but from what I saw just in the brief like interaction, the girls seemed to love Ammo. And like that's not always the case. Like granted, I think the girls love Shane, and Shane's another example. Like, man, more Shane, please. Like he is a really, really athletic, capable gay male who doesn't just represent a stereotype. Like this guy can beat people up, and that's why I love Shane. But yeah, I mean, I think Ammo could have potentially done some real damage in this game. I think the fact that he knocked out Tony was awesome, but I think his social game was evident in the fact that all the girls seemed to love him. That doesn't just happen because you're gay. Like you have to do some work and, you know, make those inroads. And I think like maybe a lot of the guys didn't understand him or didn't appreciate him because he's different and because he's out there and, you know, he dresses, you know, like a girl one day and like a guy the next. It's just however he's feeling, you know, but he definitely seems like he has some game to me. I wouldn't mind seeing him back at all.
Yeah, I think this whole generation of players that we've been talking about, I'm really looking forward to seeing down the years once they are the more recognizable people and they've played several seasons together. I'm really excited about the potential fireworks that could go on with this whole crew of Ammo and Devin and Amanda and Tori and maybe Tony, Corey and Nelson obviously in there, Jenna probably in there. I think we have a really bright future of the challenge to be looking forward to, even if the finals suddenly become a week long and you have to climb Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, because I think a lot of those people that you just named, you know, some of them are physically capable and some of them maybe aren't, but they all, for the most part, recognize that the key to this game, the way to make money is to avoid eliminations because they're kind of a crapshoot. Yeah. So like they'll do social maneuvering, whereas I think like that's a, you know, a trademark of the old school game is like people really aren't doing the politicking. They wait and see what the group decides and then they're mad if it's them. As opposed to like, I need to go to work now to make sure it isn't me, which is like that kind of proactive gameplay is always going to be compelling to me.
Yeah, and I think also having these people have their initial seasons be very politically charged and have to deal with a lot of strategy is great in making sure that that remains a constant thing and that the idea of like loyalty and honor and integrity are not part of the challenge canon going forward and that everyone is out there really looking to backstab people and play for themselves.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, The Real World and Road Rules to a degree. I mean, Road Rules was kind of a competition show where like, but they were usually collaborating. Like the team needed to complete a mission and then they would win money to split amongst themselves and that, you know, the bus would go about its merry way to some other task. But with Road Rule, I mean, sorry, with Real World, it really was just people living in a house and there wasn't much going on. And like, there certainly was no competitive element really, other than like whatever they might create, just kind of being around other alpha personalities and drinking and stuff like that. So, you know, maybe that's a factor as to like, these people didn't necessarily come into the challenge playing and scheming the way that like, man, I look at, you know, and I don't really watch it, but I know the premise. I've seen a few episodes of Are You the One? And man, like what a bizarre strategic format to try to navigate. Like you are trying to find your perfect match in terms of a dating relationship, but also there's money to be won. And like, you need to, like, you could develop feelings for somebody, but like, it's really in your best interest to like leverage those feelings. Like that's a whole other level of like social manipulation. Like that to me is like, because like you can compartmentalize. To me, I mean, we see players say you can't, like everyone in the Big Brother house right now says you can't, but I would just argue they're too dumb to do it. We see people compartmentalize games like Survivor and Big Brother as like, this is a game. I'm going to walk through this door and be somebody, and I'm going to walk out that door and be somebody different because I know I'm capable of doing that. I know myself well enough to know that that's not who I am because I'm playing a game. That not so much over here.
Yeah.
So like, I think that's also a big factor with all of this.
Yeah, definitely. Did you watch Stranded with $1 Million? I heard it was good, but is that a similar concept of really screwing people over, and are they going to start bringing those people over to the challenge?
I didn't end up watching it. I had it all DVR'd, and then somebody told me like down the stretch it was kind of disappointing. So okay. I never end up getting to it. I imagine I will at some point. It's hard for me to avoid. If there's a show I heard about that's especially like a reality competition show, there's going to be a rainy day. It's going to come up.
I know how it is. Alex, yeah. who you got winning this whole shindig?
Oh man. That's a tough call. My heart says Leroy. Part of my head, you know, says Leroy, but I just don't know that he has it in him to close it out. I love that he's positioned himself where he's in with Bananas, his entire group, but, you know, Corey and Nelson, who are like calling their shots, aren't naming him ever really anytime soon. He's not on the list of, you know, hits that need to be carried out. So, you know, given the nature of this game, given that different people are winning power different weeks and it's not just like a group consensus every time, I think Leroy's positioned to go really far. And if he gets to the end with, you know, maybe like Hunter or Tony, people that haven't really even seen a finale, like he could really do well. But man, it's just, you know, somebody would then – that means somebody's knocked off Derek, CT, and Bananas. And like those three guys between them I think just have so much win equity. Like even if the house turns and starts to target them, which like – that's a big if. I mean, they really hold a lot of the power right now. You know, Dario wants to work with them. Tony is like their, you know, Tony just follows Bananas around, I feel like, on these shows. And then the girls seem to have, you know, it's like a veteran majority over there with the girls. Kara doesn't love Bananas, but she, you know, she knows – she recognizes a need to work with him because she wants to be able to maintain relationships with CT and people like that. So at least for now, she can't make any, you know, move against them. I feel like between Johnny, Bananas, CT, and Derek, your winner probably lies in there. And then I have to go with Kara for the girls. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but I mean, both between her experience and the fact that she has – she's like the only girl on here. I'm looking at the field remaining. There's like three other girls that have her experience in terms of number of seasons, where it's like Veronica, Camilla, and Anissa have all done comparable number of seasons. Veronica has been gone forever. And Camilla and Anissa haven't really proven that they can win, like just on their own. The one, like I said, the one finale that Camilla won, she won with Bananas. And that was like a pretty sweet setup that season. So, yeah, I mean, I think, and then everyone else is just an experience factor. So I think Kara, it's to me like head and shoulders above the rest of the girls until I see something different.
Yeah, Kara would be my brain pick and my head and my heart pick for the girls' side. I definitely think she is the smart pick, and I'm also most rooting for Kara to take down that side of it.
It's wild she went winless for so long. I mean, she was like at the point she was like I think Paula had gotten to like 8 or 9 challenge wins before she finally won one, and then she like reeled off 2 straight. And Kara's done the same thing now, where this is like if you count Champs versus Pros, this is her 11th season, and she hasn't reeled off 2 straight, but you know, she's reeled off like 2 of her last 3.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it is pretty cool, I think, to see somebody who like, you know, they were just kind of perennially the, you know, the bridesmaid, and they finally got there after a long time. CT was that way too.
Yeah. Oh, it did, totally. And then on the guys' side, I think you're completely right that, frankly, the majority of the win equity has to lie with Bananas and CT and Derek. I am rooting to see, even though I probably like all three of those guys more at this point than I like Corey or Nelson, I think what is best for the franchise is someone beating Bananas in a final.
Yeah. Yeah, that will be interesting. I mean, it'd be hard to see because that's where he really has shined, right? And that's where he gets to showcase his all around ability. And like I tell you, I think in terms of all arounds, like he's better than anyone else, right? Because like
right.
The thing that like Derek will beat Bananas and CT if it's speed. Like he's gonna. I think he will. I think even now he's a little older, but Derek was always so fast. I don't know that he's lost that many steps. If it's speed, I like Derek. If it's strength, I like CT all day. But if it's like speed against CT, I like Bananas. If it's strength against Derek, I like Bananas. If it's, you know what I mean? Like he is the middle ground of everything. He's kind of the perfect – like, you know, Venn diagram, center circle. So when these finales come up and you got to do a little piece of everything, like, yeah, that's what we still haven't really seen. If Bananas gets to a finale, who can knock him off?
Right. And it would be someone other than CT. But like kind of what you're saying, if it's strength, give me CT. If it's speed or quickness, give me Derek. If it's strength and speed and puzzles, give me Johnny Bananas by a mile.
Yeah, right. And also, right, just like, you know, when it comes to his planning and his, you know, how he goes about doing things, like he's very strategic and meticulous in ways that I think CT and Derek aren't, because they, you know, just haven't evolved their games the way Banana has. Like, Bananas is the one guy, I think, on this, like, you know, and maybe Nelson, but like, I'm looking at this list of guys. Bananas is like the one guy I would like throw into the Big Brother house right now. And I feel like he would have a better shot at upending what Paul has going on right now than anyone currently in the house.
Oh, no, zero doubt about it. Bananas has like, been he's Paul got on this show for the last decade.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I would love to see him play Big Brother personally. I think it'd be very interesting.
I think he'd be great. I think he has so much experience, like relevant experience, on the job training and getting a whole house on his side.
Yeah. Oh, man, can you imagine? Yeah, Big Brother house, like all former reality contestants, live feeds of that would be just phenomenal.
Well, I've thought about this, and I've thought, like, Bananas would crush
Mark Long, he's always tweeting about wanting to play Big Brother.
Oh, really? Because I was thinking...
Yeah, Mark Long's way into it.
I was thinking that for, maybe not for Mark, but for specifically Johnny Bananas, with the gig he's got going on the challenge, if they offered me Survivor, if I was Johnny Bananas, I would turn it down. I feel like the challenge is a much more winning proposition for me.
Right, and not only that, but I think, like, in talking to Dave Vaughn, I think if you do Big Brother or Survivor or just any of those CBS shows, like, it's not like you can just, like, bounce over. Like, you're under contract for, like, 5 years.
That's what
like,
I
they
mean.
They just lock you out of doing other stuff.
Right, I don't think it would be worth one shot at Survivor for Bananas to give up what he has going on in the challenge, or even close to that. He's made $1 million probably close to that on the challenge, right?
Actually, let me look that up.
But if not, he probably will have by the end of this season, assuming he comes in like top two.
Yeah, I do love that the challenge Wikipedia does give you like lifetime earnings, like the top earners.
Oh, that's good.
All time. Yeah.
Bananas don't have to keep track of that in the spreadsheet.
Oh, no, hell no. I don't. Well, because also I really can't, you know, like when it comes to certain things like, you know, like teams splitting up and banking, like, yeah, I guess I could. I don't know. I wouldn't. But, you know, also, I don't know how – you know, Bananas to date has won $685,043.
Okay, so he's going to be if he wins this, he'll be over $1 million.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, important to note, obviously we know where the difference comes from. But number two and number three is CT and Wes, who are both just shy of 250. So Bananas with 685, I mean, just dwarfs everybody else in terms of money earned. There's only 25 people who have earned 100K to date.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, Alex, anything else that you wanted to get to about the challenge that we didn't get to yet?
I don't think so. I just, you know, I really love this show. I really enjoy it. I could talk about it forever. Obviously, we've done 2 hours here. So I think it's just unique, and it's managed to stay fresh, both with that kind of the way it's shot and the way it's edited and the structure of the game. I think that's my favorite thing about the challenge, right? It's just like the format is even different. And like Big Brother flirts with like, you know, it's a new format for the first 3 weeks, but now we don't care. And it was like really ill-conceived to begin with. Like with the challenge, it seems clear. It's like, okay, we structured this out and we thought it all the way through and it was really well planned. And, you know, I think there's some creative consultants that we could point to that are involved with the challenge that know what they're doing. And I don't necessarily want to name any names there, but I mean, yeah, they really, I think, have it figured out right now. It's really in a great place. Invasion of the Champions was a very good season. I thought the Champs versus Pros thing was very fun to watch. You know, seeing like guys like Sean Merriman and CM Punk, who's a, you know, a WWE wrestler who's now in the MMA, seeing guys like that go up against the Bananas in the West and, you know, and Darrell and these people, like, what a cool idea. I hope they keep doing that. And Lolo Jones, like, you know, Olympic athlete, like, she was a beast. And she also was, like, very dramatic. Like, so who would have known, like, these Olympic athletes are, you know, like, high drama, great reality personalities. Like, the challenge has given us this, like, modern day battle of the network reality stars versus, you know, pros versus Joes type of real life situation. And it's like, only because of the nature of the show and the structure of it, the fact the format is so moldable and can be reworked so easily, you know, could we have something like that? So I think it's been awesome. Like usually there's a challenge. I feel like usually there's like a challenge in a quarter every year. if that makes sense, where it's like, you know, every 2 years there's like 2.5 challenges, right, that is.
Yeah.
So every, you get what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm not a math person, clearly.
I know, there's a new season like every 9 months. Like every five years we get 6 challenges or whatever.
Right, right. But like this year, man, it, you know, kind of kicked off like February or March with Invasion of the Champions. And like a week or two after that was over in what, like April or May, Champs versus Pros kicked up. And then that was off for literally, I think, 1 week before this started. So like if we're trending towards challenge year round, like I sign me up. I am all in.
I'm totally with you there. As we've talked through at great detail at this point, loving the direction it seems like the show is heading as far as game design, and certainly excited about the current crop of players that they have and the people that it seems like we're going to be seeing for the years to come. So a lot of reasons to be very excited if you are a fan of the challenge, which I'd imagine anyone who's made it this far in the podcast definitely is. Alex Kidwell, you are, of course, on Twitter at Alex Kidwell. You can find Alex Podcasting, Big Brother at robhasawebsite.com. Scripted shows he's very much involved with over at Post Show Recaps. Alex, anything else you want to plug or get out there or say before we sign off?
No, not really. You kind of did it for me. I appreciate it.
I should have let
Thanks for having me on.
No,
it's fine. You're a good host. You stay informed. And I love what you guys have been putting out. Literally just before we came on, I was listening to you talking Survivor Australia with Mike Bloom, and that was a lot of fun. So, and it actually prompted me to listening to you guys discuss it prompted me to tweet something about how just kind of the nature of casting. Like I've heard these arguments with Big Brother about, like, you know, well, Big Brother Canada 3 was too many super fans and that's why it was bad. It's like, no, it was too many twists. I think, you know, the Survivor Australia has shown us, some of these other shows have shown us, that you can have fans who know what they're doing and fill the cast with them, and they, you know, they want to play and they're going to be fine and it's not going to be boring. It's just going to be cerebral, which, you know, some of us are here for. So
Yeah. Well, Alex, thank you. A huge debt of gratitude is owed. Thank you for watching the Big Brother 19 live feeds all summer and podcasting about it so that I don't have to. I've been getting by almost exclusively on your guys' daily live feed updates.
Hey, man, I'm amazed, like, you're still asking questions about what's going on in there and stuff, because I made you commit to, what, like 14 days so you could do a podcast with us on air on an eviction episode. And I figured after that you'd be done. I thought you'd get out of there for your own mental health, if nothing else. But you've hung in there. Good for you.
I'm plot committed at this point.
Yeah, at this point, you just need to know, like, yeah, for your own just peace of mind. Like, all right, is Paul going to finish this out or what?
Yeah. Is Paul going to finish it out, do you think?
At this point, I really hope so. I have a hard time making my peace with anyone else just kind of stealing it from him at the end.
Yeah.
That would be a tough pill to swallow, especially after the way last year went for him. I don't know. If he got out of the house, he didn't win, and his fans had turned against him, I'd feel pretty bad.
Yeah, I'd feel bad. I definitely think, actually, let me quickly ask you before we get out of here, because I don't know when the next time you're going to get an opportunity to talk about this is, because you guys don't talk much about Big Brother. if Paul does convert this and end up winning, are you deducting points from his winning game anywhere? Like, is he up in that top tier of winners for you?
Oh, man, that's a question I've gotten a few times lately, and I don't necessarily know that I have like a solid answer yet. I think there was elements to Derek's game that certainly assisted him in similar ways. I can see the argument. I'd really have to think about it. I think there's a conversation to be had after the top three for me in the maybe even in like the Andy or Hayden tier. Yeah. I don't know if he's making my top five.
Yeah,
I don't know that he's making my top five. Yeah, right. Because ultimately, I just keep coming back to the fact that like he's very Tony-esque with a lot of this stuff, where he like he does so much that like he makes what could be big catastrophic mistakes, but he's like fixing them before anyone catches them. And I just can't help but wonder, like, would somebody who's a little more observant be catching on to like, why did that make Paul so mad? Or why is Paul so adamant this doesn't happen? Or like none of these questions have been asked all summer. And it's just it's hard for me, you know, me and Taryn getting the arguments about how much can you put on the other people in the house versus, you know, what the onus is of somebody doing things themselves. But Man, it's just tough for me to watch this season. So much bad decision making all around.
Yeah, I mean, Paul will not be in my top five, even if he continues to win at this pace. It's not going to happen. He's not going to get ahead of Will, Dan, Derek, Andy, and Hayden for me based on all of the context. But anyway, we'll get you out of here.
I see the argument. Like, I know a lot of people are huge on Maggie. A lot of people love Maggie, and they're like, Maggie had that level of control. But like, I would argue Maggie had Paul levels of control over 50% of the house, while Paul has Paul levels of control over 100% of the house. So for that reason alone, I think he has to – the conversation starts above Maggie for me.
Okay. Not to mention Maggie was not a returning player in there with 95 days of experience over the
rest of the cast.
Right, yeah.
That is true.
All right, Alex, we will get you out of here at Alex Kidwell on Twitter. Thank you so much for taking so much time.
Oh, my pleasure, man. It was a great time. Always nice to chat with you.
Yeah. So I know just for other podcasts coming soon, as Alex mentioned, I just did a podcast with Mike Bloom talking Australian Survivor. Dom, I believe, is just now posting a podcast that he did with your fellow LFC member, Taryn Armstrong. They both, for whatever reason, just decided to rewatch all of House MD and do a podcast about. Yeah, I don't know how long that is or how. Or, well, I'm definitely excited to check it out, as should anyone who watched House. And then coming, we're actually recording tomorrow, I believe. I'm going to be talking, catching up on BB19 with Andy Heron, one of the aforementioned top five for me. So very excited about that. DomandColin.com to find everything there. I am at Colin Stone on Twitter. Dom is at DomHRV. You can email us, DomandColin@gmail.com. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a rating or feedback. All that noise. Until then, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you very soon. Take care, everybody.